It's the best bike vacation ever.
3 days of cycling in the Sierra foothills, camping under the stars, catered gourmet meals, entertainment, and in-camp activities.
It's the 20th annual Emigrant Trails Bike Trek,
Friday, September 8th through Sunday, September 10th. This excellent adventure attracts over 400 bicycle riders and helps support Breathe California Sacramento's efforts to improve air quality in our area and to work to eliminate lung disease. Make your plans now and start raising much-needed funds by registering today at sacbreathe.org or by calling 916-444-5900. You can ride as an individual or put together a team of co-workers or friends. Travel at your own pace through stunning scenery, then relax in a camp with massage, yoga, or a beverage from the cantina. Free training rides prepare you for the best bike vacation ever. The 20th Annual Emigrant Trails Bike Trek, September 8th through September 10th. 3 days of cycling, camping, and fun. Go to sacbreathe.org or call 916-444-5900 and sign up today.
Director Kathleen Frankovic says most Americans want a timetable for withdrawing troops, but not if it means insurgents get to win in Iraq. A Houston jury finds Andrea Yates not guilty of murder, insanity, and the killings of her five children.
I'm really proud of the jury.
That's Rusty Yates, Andrea's former husband. CBS's Steve Futterman was at the courthouse.
To the end, prosecutors argued that despite her problems, Andrea Yates failed to meet the Texas definition of insanity. Defense attorneys say the verdict is a watershed event in the treatment of mental illness. Yates will be sent now to a maximum security mental hospital, which is encircled by a 17-foot fence and has guard towers.
17-year-old Zach Blanton charged with sniper shooting two people, killing one on Indiana's highways, appeared in court today. He pleaded not guilty. The chairman of the U.S. Olympic Committee says we are still in it with three cities for the 2016 Games.
The following cities were selected to move forward to the next level. They are Chicago, Los Angeles, and San Francisco.
That's the USOC chairman, Peter Uberoff. If you want to be here, you got to pay $10 an hour plus benefits worth another $3. That's the deal in Chicago. City council members have passed the living wage rule for big box retailers, companies like Walmart, tops in mind. It's hot.
I see milk in the stores going up.
So hot in California, it's even costing more to produce the milk.
If you take water and to turn it into a mist and then with fans spray it around in the corrals, then that helps keep them cool. But there's a point where that doesn't do much because of the humidity.
Roy Isom at KMJ in Fresno says hundreds of dairy cows have died from the heat. Great time of year for the Santa Claus convention. It's underway in Denmark. 171 Santas from Europe, the United States, and Japan in their red suits, bellies like jelly, whiskers and all. In 90-degree heat, topmost topic, how to stay jolly. On Wall Street, the Dow down a point, NASDAQ off three. This is CBS News.
Because financial solutions have no borders or boundaries, because one market affects another market, UBS operates in only two locations, everywhere and right next to you. Powerful global resources leveraged every day to the most important issues. Yours. UBS, leader in wealth management, global asset management, and investment banking, and committed to a relationship we call you and us. Member SIPC.
CompUSA email bank. Steve emails, Dear CompUSA, got any killer back-to-school deals? Steve, we've got hundreds of killer deals, including $300 off a Toshiba laptop with Intel Core Duo processor and Microsoft Media Center Edition. $300 off! That puts it under $700 after savings and rebate. Our lowest price ever. This and other great deals are good through Saturday at CompUSA's back-to-school sale. We got it? We get it. See store for details.
Ever wondered how much the big boss really makes? Before long, you should be able to look it up if the company's big enough.
Come next year, it should be easier for shareholders of public companies and the public to figure out just what kind of money and other benefits such companies pay their top executives. The Securities and Exchange Commission is putting new disclosure rules in place before the 2006 annual reports come out. They're supposed to spell out total compensation to CEOs, chief financial officers, and the next three top paid execs. Spelled out in plain English. Tom Foti, CBS News, Washington.
Women used to throw their unmentionables at him and the rest of boy banders NSYNC. They have evidently landed with a thud for Lance Bass, who has confirmed the rumors and has outed himself. Says he's gay, has a boyfriend. Says he didn't say anything before now because he had the careers of his bandmates in his hand. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
This is your AM 1320.
Hey, listen up. What about your future? Are you unhappy with your current job? You want to make great money and get the promotion you deserve? Now's the time. Explore your options. Log on to stackjobs.com and post your resume today. That's stackjobs.com. Post your resume and have local employers find you now. New companies being added each day and hundreds of jobs being added each week. So if you're in the market for a job, stackjobs.com is a click away. At stackjobs.com, you're on your way to a better day.
You know something? There's nothing wrong with a culture where everyone has a different idea of what's humorous. The last time I can remember an entire nation being on the same page, it was Germany in the late 30s, and it didn't really turn out that funny. Remember, in its time and place, what Hitler said was considered politically correct. And it's that blind adherence to what is situationally palatable that is truly dangerous. We should question it all, poke fun at it all, sick on it all, rail against it all, and most importantly, for Christ's sake, laugh at it all. Because the only thing separating Holy Writ from complete dishul is your perspective. It's your only weapon. Keep the safety off. Don't take yourself too seriously. Remember that at the end of the day, this is just an ant farm with beepers, and it takes zero politically correct society to screw in a light bulb because they are perpetually in the dark. Of course, that's just my opinion. I could be wrong.
Violence and the deaths of innocent civilians, including children, are continuing in Lebanon. But they won't continue forever unless you help. Please give to Save the War in Lebanon.
I'm concerned about all these civilian casualties. I mean, are these clowns getting in the way of rockets meant for Hezbollah?
Not to worry. The U.S. has given enough weapons to Israel to kill huge numbers of Hezbollah. Even if oblivious civilians insist on being in their own homes at the same time, the large number of civilian deaths should tell you one thing. It's working.
Obviously, every good Republican wants the carnage to continue, but I hope we'll still maintain the illusion of wanting peace.
Oh, rest assured. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice is working hard on facial expressions projecting concern and compassion, even while she's working at prolonging the conflict. Remember, wars don't just happen. We have to make them happen. Give to Save the War in Lebanon.
Yes, give and give and give and give, and they'll take and take and take and take. Yes, they'll take the lives of every single person in the Middle East. You know, I'm not really clear why this has to happen, except maybe it's because, you know, the Nazis had a thing against rich people. I mean, the rich people were the problem. The bankers had to go. The architects had to go. The really smart people, the scientists had to go. You know, rich people were the problem for the poor people in the Weimar Republic. So Hitler was able to sell them. The rich people are the problem, and you should kill them. We'll round them up, and we'll kill them all. And anybody that protects them will be killed, too. And gay people. It's always an added extra attraction when you kill the gay people, too, along with the group that's been identified as causing all the problems. But I got a funny feeling that this is about purging the poor. This war is about purging the poor. And you know the 400,000 little snowflake babies waiting to happen in the deep freeze right now? Pretty soon we're going to ask for breeders. Hand selected, of course, by that fabulous breeder, Condi Rice. Why don't she have a kid? Let's just knock her up and sideline her for a little while. Oh, I forgot. We can work through our pregnancies now. Condoleezza Rice in Rome, urging the international community to work as quickly as possible to end the violence, because I have to go to Ferragamo. It's the last day of the sale. And the conservatives are literally calling for Condi's head. And if you really want to read Revelations, if you're into it, you know, it's all about the prostitute. It's all about the big prostitute that's riding in on the big red beast. I think it's Condi. I do. I think she's the big prostitute. But, you know, they're calling for Condoleezza Rice's head. Can I just tell you people something, you Christian evangelicals? If you're going to do a crucifixion, you couldn't pick a better place than where she is right now. There's much work to do, she said, and everyone has a role to play. My role is Secretary of Defense. Condi, you're the Secretary of the State. Oh, I wish I rehearsed a lot more, because I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I've wanted to be the Secretary of Defense. I was miscast. You mean like Tom Hanks and Bonfire of the Vanities? Uh-huh. These talks broke down quicker than a 10-year-old Hyundai, baby. Yeah, they broke down. They didn't break down. She went there with a message, and the message is, the only way to end the violence is to increase it. We must burn down the Middle East in order to save it, and that is what's going on here. Believe me. And there are people that are happy about this, especially wackos of the rapture right. Here for you, I put into evidence one Michael Evans, author of something called American Prophecies, who was included last night on Hardball so that Chris could find out if he and others like him were on a mission from God.
Are you on a mission from God, sir?
Me?
Yeah.
Me?
Yes, you.
Listen, Chris, I'm just asking an open question.
Do you believe that you have a mission from God to say what you're saying right now?
No, I don't have a mission from God to say what I'm saying. Here's what I believe. I just came from a home of a precious woman who has only been married 9 months. Her husband was taken by hostages just around the time, coincidentally, that the president was drawing the line in the sand on the G8 summit, trying to get Iran to back down. This poor woman was preparing a meal for her husband. The guy is gone. The parents haven't even seen the kid. I wept with his precious parents. It's tragic what these Israelis are facing. This is a heartbreaking situation. It's the same stuff, Chris, that the suicide bombers use that they're putting in the missiles. And by the way, why are the civilians being killed? Because they're using them. They're using the homes, and they're using them same way Saddam Hussein and the pimp media leftists in Haifa, wearing their flak jackets, aren't even out in the war,
trying to make it spin. Kind of phrases are useless. And let me just tell you something.
Okay.
If you do sympathize with human life and death, and I hope we all do on this show, 50,000 people were killed so far in Iraq in that war. There was a war of choice, and we got to debate these policies, and we got to debate who's right and who's wrong. That's what you do in a democracy. And to refer to the pimp media, you can do that. It's a free country.
Not the pimp media.
But I don't have to respect people that use phrases like that.
Then we downshift into, all right, do you believe the war in Iraq was good for the United States?
Do you believe that the Iraq war was good for the United States?
Yes.
Yes.
You believe the Iraq war, now that you've seen the ramifications of a very empowered, a very hubristic Iran, like Ahmadinejad being elected and all that, and moving his tentacles into Lebanon again and into Israel, attempting it into Israel, do you believe that he would have that power today if he were checked by his strong neighbor, Iraq? Is he better off now that Iraq's been toppled and that country's been taken over by his arm, another tentacle, Maliki?
You think Saddam Hussein would have done a better job? Is that your question?
No. I'm saying that balance of power in politics is the way we live in this world. One bad guy upsets another bad guy. Stalin and Hitler go to war, and it's probably good for us that Stalin was on the other side of that fight so that we could open a second front and win. But we would not have done as well taking on Hitler. Just a minute.
Chris, all I'm saying is sometimes
bad guys take care of each other more effectively than the good guys. That's all I'm suggesting.
Saddam Hussein.
You know, Stalin was a hideous man. Yeah, he killed his own people too. Millions of them. But Stalin was our ally against Hitler. And guess what? They took the millions of casualties. We took about a half a million. They took millions of casualties under Stalin, the Russians did. So now we've taken the check off of Iran's fundamentalist religious drive to kill and annihilate Israel and the United States, by the way. And he's asking this religious zealot if that was a good thing to do. And the guy goes, yes. What warped world do you have to live in where you can't, I mean, they're playing a chess game with marbles. They don't even have the right tools to come near the playing field. Oh, whatever the president did was right. Well, the president, Saddam wouldn't allow a military presence to fight the war on terrorism, so we have to. And what we put in there was a prime minister who is so wrong and so bad, the whole thing is now Iran's emboldened. Now Iran is going nuclear. Now Iran is telling Hezbollah, go ahead and do what you got to do. And we're killing civilians. Because we were never really good at guerrilla war. And Hezbollah is a guerrilla army. Say, that worked out well. Now, all we know how to do is air wars anymore. And if you think that sometime in the next 5 weeks while Congress is on vacation, Iran doesn't find itself nuked. And I don't care if they call it a tactical nuke to make it seem less hideous. We're going to have a nuclear war on our hands because of the psycho-neoconservative agenda that started in 1996 with these sick Pearls and Wolfowitz and the Wormsers, who are fascists, all in the name of protecting Israel. How? How? And what about us? What about America? When do we get homeland security? When is the president going to get around to safeguarding our ports, safeguarding our chemical plants, safeguarding our nuclear waste sites? When's he going to get around to that? When's he going to give a communications method to all the first responders so everyone can be in communications in case of an emergency all on the same frequency? Oh, we are just about to start something that I swear to God, I don't even know if I want to live long enough to see it. I mean, that's how bad this is. I told you, don't open up the gates of hell. Don't open up Pandora's box. You won't like it. You won't like it. You're going to have failed states everywhere. And failed states means low-tech terrorism. Flying monkeys. Which is what Hezbollah is. The military part of Hezbollah are the flying monkeys of Iran. There's no doubt in my mind that that is what it is. The political part of Hezbollah is truly a branch of Hezbollah that said, politics is the way, war doesn't work. It doesn't work. People die, and they never experience freedom because they're dead. 18 after.
The Randy Rhodes Show. No arrests, no indictments, just lots of conviction. This is Air America Radio.
You're listening to AM 1320.
Ladies and gentlemen, from New York City, Kate Clinton!
Oh my goodness, so much is happening. I guess the only people that have to be really, really happy about all this news about a war is the Catholic Church. Oh yeah, they got to be happy because they're off the front page of the paper for the first time in a long time. Woo! Woo! And I am a recovering Catholic. Some of you are here tonight, yes? So I've been following this story. I went to 16 years of Catholic education. I'm lucky I'm alive. I went to Our Lady of Psychological Warfare. I've always felt that if women have to be in the military, they should only be lesbians. Because we would never get around to having a war. Right? Because we'd have to have some meetings. A war in October? What about the softball banquet?
Hey, you streaming listeners, open your media player and click on the link to NoHaggleMortgage.com right now, and you can save thousands on your mortgage loan. It's simple, easy, and takes less than 30 seconds. For the first time, homeowners can now have direct access to the same rates that mortgage brokers get.
That's right, the same rates that mortgage brokers get.
Three things allow NoHaggleMortgage.com to get the lowest mortgage rates in the industry. One, no commissions to pay to loan officers. Two, most of the work is done over the internet, saving you a lot of money. Three, no haggling. Click on the link now, then click on Quick Quote to find out what rate you can get. Get your money faster and save thousands. No gimmicks, no middleman, no haggling. Just simple, fast, friendly, low-rate mortgage loans. Skip the loan officer. Go direct to NoHaggleMortgage.com. You're already online. Take 30 seconds and find out for yourself. Or go to NoHaggleMortgage.com. Check it out today. Licensed by the DOC.
Care of myself, making the decisions that are right for me.
We're informed, prepared, just in case.
We're starting a family, and we're so excited.
I'm using protection. Definitely. Getting tested, too.
To be sure. At Planned Parenthood, we are here for you with high-quality personal care at an affordable cost. Take care of yourself.
For a wide range of health information and services, call 1-800-230-PLAN.
Freely elected president of Iraq, the government we helped create at the cost of $100 billion a year and 2,500 servicemen's lives and perhaps 20,000 wounded, is not allowed to speak what he believes. He has to say what we believe. Is that right?
I don't care what he says in Iraq, but we're fighting a war on terrorism. We've got a country that wants to go nuclear, Iran, Ahmadinejad. He's a nutcase. A nutcase. He wrote a letter to Bush. He did a UN deal. He's completely a pathological nutcase. We've got Hezbollah, another nutcase. We've got a war we're fighting on terrorism, and this man can't come into this country and attack a precious ally of ours that's defending our... Listen, they're shedding Jewish blood.
So, what do you mean he can't? He has already done... What do you mean he can't? He just did. What do you mean he can't?
He did it. Chris, he did it. And now it's time to hold him accountable. Simply say... Like Nancy said, say no.
But he's going to speak tomorrow. Well, you're right. He's going to speak tomorrow. It's going to happen because he's a freely elected head of that government. You want to write talking points for somebody who we say is freely elected? Al Sharpton.
I mean, but Chris, not only has he come here and done it, the man stood with the president of the United States today where the president assigned more troops to send to Baghdad under this man's administration. So what are we talking about? I mean, this is the kind of schizophrenia that I'm saying we're seeing in foreign policy. We're arguing about whether he's going to speak tomorrow where some mother watching this show, her son is on his way to uphold this man.
I agree with you. Thank you.
Yeah, some kid is on his way to Iraq right now to uphold Maliki's government. What is wrong with people? This is the government the Americans want. This is the government that the neocons want in Iraq, or he wouldn't be there. Because they voted for Iyad Alawi, and he's not there. Then we put in Jafari, and he's not there. Now they've put in Maliki, and they've given him the joint sessions of Congress. They've given him the honor of coming to the United States to address the joint sessions of Congress. Why? Because he's their guy. That's why. He's a Shia radical who is perfect, perfect for this third world war that they want to start between Shia and Sunni, or poor against poor Arabs. The street. They want the street to fight each other. That's what they want, to preserve the monarchies, to preserve the dictators, to preserve the Emiratis, to preserve the oil-rich heads of state. They want to kill the people. This is crazy. It's disgusting. Cliff in Pennsylvania.
Hi, Randy. How are you?
I'm all right.
Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to talk a little bit about the difference in theology when it comes to evangelical Christianity between just regular end-timers and dominionist theologists. Dominionist theologists probably have been around at least since the political push in Britain to create Israel began, and their goal is not so much just to wait around for the end times to begin, but to sort of help make it happen, to make way the way of the Lord, so to speak. So when they're looking at World War III, I mean, there really is glee behind Newt Gingrich's eyes, either because, you know, he actually believes this stuff, or because he's looking to the political advantages to sort of keep this fractured base of evangelical Christians who either looking forward to.
But look, the end times cannot come unless Israel is destroyed. So how in the freaking world are people who love Israel and think it's a wonderful democracy that's been flourishing for 58, 60 years, how can they approve of what seems to be people egging on world events according to the biblical word that will absolutely result in the death and destruction of Israel?
Well, you see,
how am I the anti-Semite here? If I'm looking at Israel being surrounded by failed states and going, I don't see how that benefits Israel. Nor do I see how it benefits America.
Yeah, I understand completely, and believe me, you know, that's just another political tactic, and obviously there have been a lot of people who have read the talking points to call into the liberal talk.
Well, here's what I want. I want people who think they love Israel because of evangelical teachings to start calling these shows and ask, doesn't Israel have to be destroyed in order for Jesus to come back? And figure out whether you support Israel or you don't. That's it.
The Randy Rhoads Show. Radio only smarter. This is Air America Radio. It's the Randy Rhoads Show.
It's the best bike vacation ever.
3 days of cycling in the Sierra foothills, camping under the stars, catered gourmet meals, entertainment, and in-camp activities.
It's the 20th annual Emigrant Trails Bike Trek, Friday, September 8th through Sunday, September 10th. This excellent adventure attracts over 400 bicycle riders and helps support Breathe California Sacramento's efforts to improve air quality in our area and to work to eliminate lung disease. Make your plans now and start raising much-needed funds by registering today at sacbreathe.org or by calling 916-444-5900. You can ride as an individual or put together a team of co-workers or friends. Travel at your own pace through stunning scenery, then relax in a camp with massage, yoga, or a beverage from the cantina. Free training rides prepare you for the best bike vacation ever. The 20th Annual Emigrant Trails Bike Trek, September 8th through September 10th. 3 days of cycling, camping, and fun. Go to sacbreathe.org or call 916-444-5900 and sign up today.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
Morning, I learned about it from the TV. As the bombs began to rain on Israel and Lebanon at 4 p.m. Thursday, CNN asked the question, brink of war? Huh? CNN's not sure. Is it war? The brink of war? The brink of the brink of war? A precipice leading to a slope ending on a brink with war? CNN followed the story all through Thursday night and into Friday.
Israeli aircraft and ships today bombarded hundreds of targets.
Thousands of Lebanese are pouring across the border.
Radical Islamist terrorists fired dozens of rockets.
Large explosions.
A significant airstrike.
Stepping up rocket attacks.
A naval gunship.
And warplanes have bombed a military base near the Syrian border.
Things seem to be getting worse. So 24 hours later, at 4:06 on Friday, CNN was ready to declare, brink of war! What does it take for you people to lose the question mark? 300 rockets in 2 days? One side called it an open war. I think the other side said they were going to turn the clock back 20 years in Lebanon. And still, blink. Finally, at 10 p.m. Friday night, Anderson Cooper with the call.
A new day is about to dawn, the Middle East poised on the brink.
This is Anderson Cooper 360, Middle East on the Brink.
There you have it. CNN officially removes the question mark and declares we are on the brink. But guess what? It's really just war. But finally, Fox was ready to ask the important question.
In the impact segment tonight, how the violence in the Middle East is affecting us here in the United States.
All this carnage in a region we perhaps helped destabilize. How's it affecting us? Is there a place where we could quantify how we feel about the devastation being wrought? Perhaps in our hearts or minds. Or
we're going to feel this tension in the near term here at home. At the pump.
Some say it won't take long for the ripple effects of the Mideast conflicts to be felt at gas pumps.
I think that most Americans are going to feel that at the pump.
We will feel it, but only at the pump. The TV is not an appropriate place to feel things. No, it's only the pump. The pump is like the monolith in 2001. As you get near the pump, you really start to feel it. Then when you're within credit card swiping range, it hits you. My God! The humanity! 313 is down! Those poor, poor people. You know, sometimes when it's quiet, you can hear the pump scream.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
It's the best bike vacation ever.
At Cache Creek Casino Resort, win fast, win often with Cache Fever Jackpot. Jackpots start at $20,000 and are guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Every time a Cache Fever jackpot hits, a Cache Club player wins just for playing with their card. Plus, you can check the Cache Fever jackpot total and your Cache Club points online now at CacheCreek.com. So join Cache Club today and get the fever. Cache Creek Casino Resort.
Yeah.
we don't get fooled again.
Good evening. I would like to report on the state of our war against the American people. We're mounting a sustained campaign to crack down on every American and every person of every faith and every nation, and to bring them to justice. All missions are being executed according to plan, without warning or provocation. Americans are being swept up in an international dragnet. Thousands of FBI agents are on the trail of other citizens here and abroad. It has everything to do with hate and evil and murder and prejudice. America is strong, strong, strong.
Federal agents, we are armed!
A side of Democrat or Republican. These are the only two choices we have, unfortunately. Obviously, we need a third party, fourth party. We need more choices if we're going to call ourselves a democracy. But all we got right now is two choices. Choose a freaking side and show up and vote.
Absolutely. I had a buddy in Mosul that called me on a cell phone, terrible connection, and told me he witnessed our troops handing out heavy weapons to indigenous personnel. I'm not talking AKs. I'm talking PKMs, NSVs, RPGs, mortars, recoilless rifles. Why? To perpetuate the chaos so we can steal, so our boys can die?
Yes.
You know, the Republican senators, was a couple of weeks ago, were for the Maliki plan for amnesty for insurgents that only kill our troops.
I'm telling you, that was my first clue, that they had handpicked this guy and that this guy was up to absolute evil. I mean, he wanted amnesty for Iraqis who had only killed an American liberator?
Mm-hmm.
Damn, and the Republicans in the Senate, they were standing up saying, we have to stop being wimps and accept the fact that amnesty must be given to Iraqis who have only killed an American soldier.
And look at the names of the ones who were doing it. McConnell, Chambliss, the one who ran the...
Oh, my God, Chambliss, the guy that actually diminished and morphed Max Cleland's face into Osama bin Laden's face, that bastard Republican. Now, for those of you who don't know, Max Cleland was a Vietnam veteran who lost three limbs in Vietnam, came back, made himself into a senator, okay? The guy is missing an arm and two legs, and he just lives as proud as he can, and he was a senator from Georgia, a Democratic senator from Georgia. Saxby Chambliss, this piece of swill chicken hawk, had commercials up on the air to defeat Cleland that morphed Max Cleland's face into Osama bin Laden. He called Max Cleland not patriotic enough. His service wasn't good enough. John Kerry's service wasn't good enough. You think about what they did.
Absolutely.
Oh, man, they pissed down. It's like they opened the mouth of every fighting man who had every opportunity to get out of Vietnam service, who, you know, could have gone. I mean, come on, Kerry was rich enough. His parents were well-connected enough. Al Gore's father was a senator. He didn't have to go to Vietnam. He went to Vietnam. And you know what they said about Al Gore? Oh, his service wasn't dangerous enough. Why? Because he was a journalist. Look how many freaking journalists have been killed in Iraq. More in this war than any other war, including Vietnam, which lasted for about 15 years. I mean, these people are shameless how they diss the troops. Now they want to give amnesty if the only crime you committed was you killed an American soldier in uniform?
Yes, but let's stay the course and keep the meat grinder going.
Unbelievable.
Are you coming down to Camp Casey?
Yes, I am. I'll be there probably the end of August, beginning of September.
All right. Well,
yeah.
I hope to get to see you there.
Well, you will.
Well, thanks for taking my call. It's been a pleasure. And keep up the great work and just know that we're cheering for you. And if we do end up getting renditioned, I can think of no one better to be waterboarded next to than you.
You rule. Thank you.
Love you.
I love you more.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. That's a Marine who's afraid of being waterboarded. But if he's going to be waterboarded, can think of nobody better to be waterboarded with than me. Listen, I won't do well under torture because, A, I'll just give them solutions to their problems and piss them off even more. And, B, I don't like pain. Not good. Not good for me. Stefan in Colorado.
Hi, Randy. I'm a first-time caller.
Are you?
Yes.
Not anymore.
Hey, I was just mainly calling to point out how I think you're totally right on this whole Israel-Hezbollah issue and about how it's completely a front and a way for them to get into Iran and Syria. And I think a lot of people are falling prey. You got the Christians falling prey because they're on the side of the, you know, Israelis because they believe that that's key to their Armageddon and then their rapture. And then you even have a lot of liberal people of the Jewish faith. You know, I think Al Franken was even on the side of. I think picking sides with this issue is very dangerous. And that's all I really had to say because. I think everything you see now is completely framed.
I don't think when you say picking sides, I think what you need to say is that you are looking at the long-term health of America and Israel. And everything that these guys have done have endangered America and Israel. Having failed states all over the Middle East ain't going to help Israel. It's going to create a terrorist population, people that have no other way to express themselves but to get even with Israel and America. And we're going to see terrorism come here like you never saw. Israel's going to see terrorism like they've had experiences with terrorists, but they're about to see the entire Middle East come at them. You talk, and, you know, when you think about the rapture, right, my God, Israel has to be destroyed in their scenario in order for Jesus to come back. I'm thinking in the long term, I'm thinking in the immediate term, I'm thinking, am I going to be on the side of the preservationists, the people that want to preserve the great democracies of the world, including Lebanon, which really rose from the ashes. They are a phoenix. And Israel, that through everything has pulled through and has shown themselves to be democratic and, open to new ideas and open to, you know, they try to kibbutz system. You know that the Netanyahus of the world want to stamp out that whole labor Zionism movement. It's going to be real specific who lives. And I don't like it. I think killing is killing. And quite frankly, if our foreign policy increases the killing, then we're on the side of the killers, not on the side of the people who preserve life and liberty.
I agree.
The decision is not are you for or against America, are you for or against Israel? That's the way the Republicans like to frame it. The issue is are you for the preservation of life and liberty or are you against the preservation of life and liberty? Are you someone who will take life and liberty from people who practice life and liberty?
Exactly.
That's the choice.
I think you just told it better than I even thought about it.
I'm telling you. And when they threw Israel into the mix, it was like there's so many ignorant people that are so afraid to say anything that goes against Israel's foreign policy,
exactly.
Even if they can see that it's going to damage Israel's ability to survive, because they're just so cowed into anything Israel does is right, just like they're cowed into anything America does is right. It's bull crap.
Well, I think that the American foreign policy is disingenuous. I think it's obvious to everyone by this point that...
Do you remember when we first went into Iraq, what it was called? They made a mistake.
It was first called Operation Iraqi Liberation, and then they changed it to Operation Iraqi Freedom.
It was actually... Bush referred to it as a crusade. And that's what it is, you know. It's a crusade.
Uh-huh.
And they want to wipe out an entire population.
It's frightening.
It's genocide, quite frankly. And no good can come of it. No good. No good at all. And I don't want to wait until we're being attacked left and right and Israel's being attacked left and right. Listen, to me, their foreign policy has proven to be a dog. It's caused nothing but the culture of death. It hasn't made anybody
safer. They worship death.
They do.
I think they
look at killing people as population control. I mean, they are literally thinning out the herd, and they're picking, you know, which wealthy Islamic monarch, which wealthy Islamic caliphate leader, which wealthy Emirati, which wealthy family gets to live. The rest of the people, you can, poor Jews, poor Sunnis, poor Shia, they can all go to hell. I'm serious. This is really a war against the poor. There's no question in my mind they are thinning out the herd and using people's love of Israel to forward a culture of death. I'm sorry, that is just disgusting. You know, and people are really afraid to say anything. Mike in Ithaca.
Yeah, hi there. How are you?
I'm all right.
I was driving home listening to you. I listen to you every day on my drive home, like the other caller you had, and a little bell went off for the first time. Thank you very much. I didn't get the first-time caller treatment, did I? Stop. Thank you.
You're welcome.
That, you know, the whole Project for a New American Century, World War III, planning ahead for it all, it's never made sense to me, aside from profiteering, why our defense budget is the equivalent to the rest of the world's, unless you look at it from the perspective of their planning for World War III. We've been stockpiling.
Yeah.
So that was it. It was just sort of, it might seem obvious, but somehow the connection just became very clear.
Yeah, these people are wicked evil. I mean, really wicked evil.
Yeah.
They only know how to make, they don't see, you know, they don't know how to make money with a peace dividend, which benefits all people.
Yeah.
They only know how to enrich a very slim, tiny fraction of the people that inhabit this planet. The defense contractors, the oil magnates, the seven sisters, if you will, the prostitute, or the hua, as I like to call her, Condi, who thinks she's Cleopatra, by the way. I'm telling you, you check... Whoa, I forgot where I got the article. Here is an article that says that British Petroleum is making $55,000 per minute. Now, if you think that the people who are making $55,000 per minute, that their lives are more valuable than your life, or that their lives are more valuable than anyone else's life, you got problems that I can't help you with. 47 after.
The Randy Rhoads Show, helping to fight global warming just by being cool. This is Air America Radio.
A liberal dose of the truth.
It's the best bike vacation ever. 3 days of cycling in the Sierra foothills, camping under the stars, catered gourmet meals, entertainment, and in-camp activities. It's the 20th annual Emigrant Trails Bike Trek, Friday, September 8th through Sunday, September 10th. This excellent adventure attracts over 400 bicycle riders and helps support Breathe California Sacramento's efforts to improve air quality in our area and to work to eliminate lung disease. Make your plans now and start raising much-needed funds by registering today at sacbreathe.org or by calling 916-444-5900. You can ride as an individual or put together a team of co-workers or friends. Travel at your own pace through stunning scenery, then relax in a camp with massage, yoga, or a beverage from the cantina. Free training rides prepare you for the best bike vacation ever. The 20th Annual Emigrant Trails Bike Trek, September 8th through September 10th. 3 days of cycling, camping, and fun. Go to sacbreathe.org or call 916-444-5900 and sign up today.
After Maureen in Burlington, Vermont.
Oh, it's great to talk to you. I don't know how you want to categorize this. I've called about four different times, never have gotten in, so can I hear my noise? Great. Okay. The screener, I guess, said I don't have much time. Now, I had my best friend up here over the weekend from Massachusetts, who's a Democrat, with her husband, who is a Republican. I tried to talk to him about Bush, about all this propaganda that he's been listening to. He completely disagrees with me. He went as far as saying, well, the Taliban was there before we went there. I said, no, they were in Afghanistan. What? Can you give me some pointers? And I got it got to the point where I was thumping his chest, trying to get some rationale into his thinking. What quick, clear points can I say to him next time to at least make him think that he is being hoodwinked by this whole thing?
$4 a gallon.
Okay, $4 a gallon. I'm just writing it down here.
Just say $4 a gallon.
And, you know, about this this nonsense.
And let me tell you something, just so you know, okay? There is, it's almost a disease. I mean, it's a psychological condition, okay? It's the ultimate follower. It's the ultimate peer pressure. And everybody thinks peer pressure ends once we're out of our teens. Bull crap, baby. That's why we women are so, I don't know, if a real tall drink of water with a fabulous dress and gorgeous skin and fabulous hair and teeth and walks into a room and you go, oh my God, she's 50 or whatever, and you just feel small. That's peer pressure, okay?
Well, you know,
but I just, wait, hang on. You asked me a question, and I just want you to have this peace of mind, all right?
Mm-hmm. This guy is a cop who 2 years ago lost his job when Bush, took out a lot of the cops.
Okay, so then let me tell you this. There is a portion of the population that is still suffering from a sort of peer pressure, mm-hmm, where they are such followers, they cannot do anything but follow.
He's over the cliff, isn't he?
Yes, he's a lemming. Yes, he is.
He's a lemming, I know.
He's a lemming. And there are people in this country, just like there were Germans in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a good part of the population in Germany were fleeing. A good part of the population were hiding people, mm-hmm, helping people. They understood that this was going to be complete and utter genocide.
Mm-hmm.
And they fought against it in their own small way, and some did it in very big ways.
Yeah.
However, there was a very large part of the population that were lemmings, that were followers, that and they followed Hitler right over the fascist cliff.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
We're doing the same thing. This country's going fascist. Corporations are all that matter. We all know this. We get it. And it's all about the enrichment of Israel now. This is not really a war as much as it is an economic plan.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. So if people have to die, people have to die because the very rich have to be protected. The poor are very disposable. Now, your friend, if he doesn't get it by now, never will. So just say to yourself, there is no point in arguing with this man. He is a lemming. What I know, though, is that when they come for him, I will protect him, too.
That's what I'll say. But let me just say one thing quick, Randy. About a month ago, I tried to get on this line like four or five times. A month ago, Barbara Bush came up here to next to Burlington at Essex. And it was, I think it was a 500 plate for a couple to get to talk to her after this.
Ew.
So when she came through, there was like maybe a hundred. I counted 109. The paper said 85. They always bring it down a little for some reason. When she went by, she turned her head, and almost everyone who came into that exclusive little club there would not look at us, would not look at the signs. There was Humvees, there was BMW. I mean, it was money, 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 and they couldn't even look at our face. That told me so much right there. They were so ashamed they could not even look at us.
Well, that's their, you know, that is who they are. When they show you who they are,
mm-hmm.
believe them.
Mm-hmm.
Believe them. When Barbara Bush said that it was a good result that people were having to live in a sports stadium after a hurricane because they were disadvantaged people, so this was a good result. She told you who she was.
Yeah, I know, exactly.
Believe her.
I know. She's lived in the real world, huh? Yeah, that's really something. And that was funny when she was on Larry King and she repeated that. He didn't even, of course, he's just, I don't know what the deal was with Larry King. I mean,
he's lazy. Larry King is neither good nor evil. He's just lazy.
Yeah,
you know, he's just a very lazy man. And that's it. You know, he's been milking this this thing, you know, he did overnights in radio for years and years with no competition. He milked it. He was the first one up on CNN. And he's milked it all these years. He's lazy.
And so many of the people in the arenas here, you know, were underprivileged anyway. This is working very well for them.
Believe her.
KCTC, Sacramento's Left Channel. Streaming live at 1320leftchannel.com.
No ceasefire emerges from a meeting on the crisis in the Middle East.
More are being killed, more destruction, and more aggression against the civilians in Lebanon.
And a promise from the Iraqi Prime Minister.
Iraqis are your allies in the war on terror.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Cammie McCormick. The international meeting in Rome on the Middle East crisis failed to agree on details of a ceasefire.
We are all agreed that we want most urgently to end the violence on a basis that this time will be sustainable.
U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice refused to call for an immediate ceasefire, and the fighting continued. It was one of the deadliest days yet for the Israeli military. Here's correspondent Dan Raviv.
All day, Israelis listening to the news on radio and TV heard there were casualties in fierce fighting, and many listeners guessed that meant there were deaths. Once the families of the fallen were informed, the country was told on newscasts at midnight local time. The top story, 9 Israeli soldiers killed, dozens wounded. Israelis realize they're facing a stubborn enemy, well able to organize surprise ambushes.
Most of those deaths occurred in Ben Jebel, a key Hezbollah stronghold. Israeli planes hit the southern Lebanese city of Tyre, targeting buildings believed used by Hezbollah. But while the air bombardment appears to be easing somewhat, the ground battles may intensify. CBS News military analyst Jeff McCausland on what the Israeli military is up against.
They may at this juncture be the victims of a series of bad choices. They may have assumed that air power would take care of the problem. It has not. They may have assumed that there could be an international force brought in. So right now, they may think this is the only option they got left.
A new CBS News New York Times poll finds many Americans think Israel shares the blame for the current fighting, and a majority think it likely the conflict will spread. Now this.
CompUSA email bank.
Lisa emails, Dear CompUSA, I need a great camera, but I'm a student, so I also need a great deal. Okay, Lisa, how about $120 off a 5-megapixel Kodak EasyShare digital camera? That's right, $120 off. That puts it under $130 after savings and rebate. Our lowest price ever. That and hundreds more back-to-school deals are good through Saturday at CompUSA. We got it, we get it. See store for details.
How long will I be in chemotherapy?
What should I ask my doctor?
What are the side effects?
Will I lose my hair?
When will I start to feel better?
What about alternate therapies?
Who can I turn to for help?
If you're facing chemotherapy, it's easy to feel overwhelmed. But now it's easier to find answers in one place. Chemotherapy.com. From different types of treatment to side effects, to the right questions to ask along the way. The answers are at your fingertips at www.chemotherapy.com. Your complete chemotherapy guide.
Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki spoke to Congress today, telling lawmakers his country is a key ally in the war on terror.
It is your duty and our duty to defeat this terror. Iraq is the front line in this struggle.
He received several standing ovations, but some Democrats stayed away, angry that Maliki has refused to criticize Hezbollah for its attacks on Israel. Saddam Hussein was back in court today in Baghdad after his release from the hospital, where he'd been hooked up to a feeding tube because of his hunger strike.
He looked noticeably thinner, but he was still the old Saddam, very defiant. He insisted at one point that if he did get the death penalty, that he did not want to be hanged. He wanted to be shot because he was a soldier and that's what he deserved. If Saddam is found guilty, of course, he could face the death penalty. In that case, there would be a quick appeal. And if he loses that appeal, Iraqi law says he's supposed to be executed within 30 days.
Correspondent Mark Strassman in Baghdad. A verdict today in the retrial of Andrea Yates, who drowned her young children in a bathtub.
We, the jury, find the defendant, Andrea P.A. Yates, not guilty by reason of insanity.
This is Steve Futterman at the County Courthouse in Houston. The decision was a stunning reversal. In Andrea Yates' first trial, she was found guilty, this time not guilty by reason of insanity. Yates' lead attorney, George Parnham, said it was the right decision.
Mental health, I think, has been addressed. This case is almost a watershed for mental illness in the criminal justice system.
Yates stood stoically as the verdict was announced. She showed no emotion.
Officials in California now investigating whether more than 50 deaths may be related to the heat wave. In Stanislaus County, they've declared an emergency, meaning farmers can bury the cows they're losing to the heat. Kevin Soros is a dairy farmer.
They just start panting, and as soon as they hit the floor, they're gone.
You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Do you have over $10,000 in credit cards?
Do you...
At Cache Creek Casino Resort, win fast, win often with Cache Fever Jackpot. Jackpots start at $20,000 and are guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Every time a Cache Fever jackpot hits, a Cache Club player wins just for playing with their card. Plus, you can check the Cache Fever jackpot total and your Cache Club points online now at CacheCreek.com. So join Cache Club today and get the fever. Cache Creek Casino Resort.
Janine Garofalo and Sam Cedar. For legal purposes, everything you'll hear for the next 3 hours is merely a joke, therefore not actionable in a court of law. I repeat, it's a joke. But just a reminder, many a truth spoken in jest, but not so much so that one could get sued for it. The Majority Report.
Hello, America. It's the Majority Report. John Elliott sitting in for Sam Cedar. On the Air America Radio Network, all over America, all over the world. Where are you? Listening to us on XM? In Canada? Listening to us in... on the internet, in Australia, Bangkok, Finland, and people in Oklahoma, they need to know it's 1974. Welcome to the Majority Report. How are you? Happy Wednesday. You can see the weekend from here. That's one thing nice about summer is, you know, you can really look forward to your weekends because you get to do things and enjoy with them, don't you? What a show we have today. I owe you an apology. Yesterday we promised you that we would be having Lester Brown on the show, and he's president of Earth Policy Institute. He's been honored with more than 20 honorary degrees and numerous prizes. He's received the United Nations Environment Prize. Knows more about the environment than Al Gore. Enough said. Only we got our signals crossed on our end, and it was completely our fault as far as his phones, the correct phone number, so we missed calling him. We failed. But we are rectifying that, and we are doing that tonight, and we're going to have him on with us in a few minutes, and we are very grateful, and he's moved his schedule around, enabling us to visit with him tonight. Also, Bernie Sanders, the longest-sitting independent in the House of Representatives, and not only that, the longest-sitting independent in history. If you haven't heard Bernie Sanders before, you're in for a treat. This is a wonderful politician. This is a politician that everyone would vote for, and when I've had him on my show in the past, I do a show here on KLSD in San Diego, the Air America affiliate on noon to 2 on weekends. Shameless plug. When I've had Mr. Sanders on before, the calls that come in after are, God, I'd vote for that guy. I wish he was running in my district. Larry Beinert wrote a book called Wag the Dog, and we all know what that has meant. He's got a new book out called Fog Facts, Searching for Truth in the Land of Spin, and he's going to be with us. And then we have a lady by the name of Anne-Marie Kimball, and she's going to talk about infectious disease. And she's going to talk about infectious disease in the era of global trade. And she's going to scare the hell out of you. You will not want to miss this. Later on this week, Paul Krugman, Scott Ritter, CBS News terrorist expert and former CIA agent, Michael Shearer, the man that actually set up and ran the bin Laden unit inside the CIA. Did I say Jonathan Alter? I think I did. And we're going to have a hostage negotiator, a gentleman that has spent considerable amount of time in the Middle East, Palestine, Israel. He's boarding a plane to Europe on Friday. We're going to get him at from the airport, I believe, just before he boards the plane. So we've we're going to keep you busy. If you'd like to speak with us, 866-303-2270. You know, we opened yesterday's show with the news that 4 UN workers in Lebanon had been killed by an Israeli rocket. And now we hear that Secretary General Kofi Annan, and I read this in the Australian Herald Sun. I get off the show, I go home, I eat, I read. And he said that the attack looked deliberate. And I knew this last night. Before I went to bed, everybody else was finding out about it this morning. He said that he was, quote-unquote, shocked at Israel's, quote, apparent deliberate targeting of a U.N. post in Lebanon in which up to four U.N. observers were killed. He described the strike as, quote, a coordinated artillery and aerial attack on a long-established and clearly marked U.N. post. He said it took place, quote, despite personal assurances given to me by Prime Minister Olmert that U.N. positions would be spared Israeli fire. Furthermore, General Alan Pellegrini, the U.N. force commander in South Lebanon, had been in repeated contact with Israeli officers throughout the day on Tuesday, stressing the need to protect that particular U.N. position from attack. Kofi Annan said, I call on the government of Israel to conduct a full investigation into this very disturbing incident and demand that any further attack on U.N. positions and personnel must stop. The names and nationalities of those killed are being withheld, etc., etc. How terrible is this? Is this just collateral damage? Because the world is jumping up on this one. This is not good stuff. This is not good stuff. It appeared, apparently, and this is from a Western diplomat that was familiar with the preliminary UN assessments of the scene. He said it appeared that the munition that hit the bunker was precision-guided. We all know what precision-guided missiles are, don't we? Seems like it was deliberate. According to Kofi Annan is being very careful right now with what he says. Then certainly there's no love lost between the woolly bully John Bolton representing us at the UN as our ambassador to the UN. Isn't that a shudder? I can hardly say that without shuddering. God, I wish we didn't have that guy. And we'll get into it a little later. We'll talk about him. So we've got that going on. And in the meantime, Condi's flipping around the Middle East, making appearances and doing nothing to stop the violence. Question, can the United States call for a ceasefire in Lebanon? I mean, didn't Bush invade Iraq to defend America and defeat Al-Qaeda, even though they weren't there? Isn't that what Israel's doing? Now, in Rome, after a very loud meeting that pitted the United States against the European countries and the Arab countries, Condi holds a press conference. Stalling, lists terms and conditions for a ceasefire. All the while, deaths and injuries mount. Golly! Can't somebody out there do something? Got the United States against Europe and the Arab League. And we're standing up there saying, boy, they need the time. And it's been, this was in the San Francisco Chronicle over the weekend. They have had this plan in place in Israel for 3 years. They were waiting for a trigger. And when Hezbollah kidnapped two Israeli soldiers, bada bing, there was the trigger. And that's what's unleashed. Look at how organized they are. Look at how quickly they can respond. Look at how their bombs know where to go. It's all part of a plan. Part of the Bush plan is to stand back and let it happen. So more and more civilians are dying. We're close to 400 civilians in Lebanon. Close to 400. And Condi Rice says, well, you know, I got to have a lasting ceasefire here. I mean, just a ceasefire for the sake of having a ceasefire is not really a ceasefire. It's really just, it's a ceasefire, and that's not a ceasefire. Paul, Sacramento, California, how are you? You're on the Majority Report with John Elliott. How are you doing? Hello, Paul.
Okay. First of all, I want to say you are representing the best show on the network.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome, and I wish it was on every day here. It's not.
Thank you.
Let's see. What I wanted to tell you, when somebody stands up and talks about this Middle East crisis and doesn't insist on an absolute stop to hostilities right now, today, they're obviously up to no good.
I agree. The point is, how do we get them? How do we make them do something? I mean, it's clear here. When Condoleezza Rice stands there and says, in effect, I don't really want this limited ceasefire, because a limited ceasefire is not a lasting ceasefire. But you know what? If you had a limited ceasefire, we all know. I mean, we're not stupid. The world would realize that's the starting point to a permanent ceasefire, isn't it?
Of course. I forgot what it was, who it was, but one of the White House correspondents the other day said, "What if you set up a ceasefire and it falls through? Doesn't that save all the damage that didn't happen during that time that there was a ceasefire?"
Yeah, I hate to trivialize it by referring to a hockey game, but in a hockey game, when a couple of guys start to fight and two or three others clear the benches, before you really get going at it, if you blow the whistle and the referees put those guys in the penalty box, things stop. Everything stops before they drop the puck again. But if they just keep going, it's just going to keep going, and it's just going to escalate. So if you really want to stop it, this is almost like Yogi Berra, but you got to stop it before you stop it, you know?
And how many Lebanese citizens have turned into Hezbollah fighters in the last week?
Well, you know.
How many of them watched their little sister die or something like that?
One of the things that Chris Dickey said to me a couple of weeks ago, he was calling in from Amman, Jordan. He's the chief military, the chief Middle East correspondent for Newsweek magazine. And he said, you know, this when you're in that environment and you're resisting Hezbollah, you don't want to be a part of them. You're a Lebanese. You do not want to be a part of Hezbollah because you view them as a terrorist group. And then all of a sudden someone in your family gets killed and the bomb lands in your house and your mother is killed. Then, you know, somehow it's a lasting thing. And then it gets to the occupation theory. And I mean, that's where he was going, the whole theory of occupation. And occupation takes on many forms. I mean, it was the tragic story front page New York Times yesterday of this family in a small community in southern Lebanon. Everybody was leaving. They were told to leave. They resisted it. And finally they said, okay, we're not going to resist it anymore. They didn't make it but a few miles, and they were in two vans, and one of them got a direct hit. Shouldn't Israel know about that? Shouldn't they know that's happening? Paul, hey, thanks for the call. I really appreciate it. We're going to be right back. We're going to take your calls, 866-303-2270. We also have Lester Brown coming up, and you don't want to miss this because there's just so much going on in the world. If it isn't the Israeli Hezbollah situation, we got to look at global warming as a really big issue. And then we got to look in on the decider. I understand the decider made a decision because he's the decider. John Elliott on the Majority Report on the Air America Radio Network. They're coming back.
Are you a Republican, a conservative, a dumbass? Give Janine and Sam a call at 866-303-2270. The Majority Report. Ranting and raving is what we're all about.
You're listening to AM 1320.
If you send messages.
Of course, we're after Saddam Hussein. I mean, Bin Laden. He's. Let me say, I certainly hope so. Before I.
If you send messages.
That's a loaded question. First of all, I admire Senator Kerry's service to our country.
If you send messages.
I admire the fact that he is a great dad. We're facing
If you send messages.
Let me finish. And so the answer to your question is, no doubt about it, it's tough. It's hard work.
I'll always consider myself the father of four boys, even though two of my sons are gone. Our twins, Kevin and Brian, died when their boat capsized. Bad weather, cold water, and the absence of life jackets contributed to their deaths. If I can help one person avoid the daily heartbreak that my wife and family must endure, then asking you to be responsible on your boat will be well worth my time. Visit BoatSmarter.com, and remember, if it's your boat, it's your responsibility.
Institute. A gentleman who sat by his phone last night, and I apologize profusely, Mr. Brown. It was my fault. I misplaced the number. I thought our production staff had it, and I was the one that had it. So I apologize. Thank you very much for making yourself available to us again this evening.
No problem.
You have a fascinating book, and I should tell our listening audience this is your 17th book, Plan B2.0, Rescuing a Planet Under Stress and a Civilization in Trouble. You point out in the beginning that the 21st century global civilization is not the first to face a prospect of environmentally induced economic decline, and the question is how we will respond. Having studied this for the number of years that you have, do you get the feeling we're not responding very well, or that certain parts of the world are and that we're kind of falling behind here in the States?
I think the world as a whole is not responding very well. There are a few countries that are doing some of the right things, in fact, many of the right things. If I were to pick a country that's doing more things right than anyone else, it would be Sweden. But the world as a whole is not doing well, and the question is, can we get our act together before time runs out, before we cross some of these tipping points where, for example, we can't stop the melting of the Greenland ice sheet, or before the Amazon basin dries out and we lose the Amazon rainforest. So we're getting very close on both of those now, just to cite a couple of major challenges that we're facing as a civilization.
Yeah, I realize that we've got an oil crisis going on, and you talk in your book about, you know, in late 2004 when oil finally went to $50 a barrel, and that was so 2004 ago. We're now facing a real crisis now. It's now hitting people in the pocketbooks. And I think for the very first time, Americans are starting to realize that, you know, we really do need to seek alternative energy, and we need to seek on alternative fuels. And the first thing that comes to everybody's mind is biodiesel and biofuel. And you have a paper out where you say that cars, not people, will claim most of the increase in world grain consumption this year. And that's something I don't think that most people know about.
Now, most governments that have biofuel programs have very substantial subsidies. We have a 52-cent a gallon tax credit for ethanol, for example. But the thing that's really driving the extraordinary investment now in ethanol distilleries in this country is the runaway price of oil. It suddenly has become extraordinarily profitable, and there are scores of ethanol distilleries being built. If all the distilleries planned in Iowa are completed, the ethanol distilleries will consume the entire Iowa corn crop, for example. No one seems to be in charge of this and is really looking to see if we have enough corn or other grain to fuel all these distilleries.
Yeah, you say in agricultural terms, and this is a startling statement. In agricultural terms, the world appetite for automotive fuel is insatiable. The grain required to fill a 25-gallon SUV gas tank with ethanol will feed one person for a year. The grain to fill a tank every 2 weeks over a year would feed 26 people. That's extraordinary.
It is. When I did that calculation, I was a bit surprised myself. But it's a very simple calculation. 25 gallons of ethanol takes 10 bushels of corn, which weigh 56 pounds each, so that's 560 pounds of grain. The average Indian gets by on less than 400 pounds of grain, for example.
Wow.
So you can feed a person in the developing country with the grain that requires to fill one tank of an SUV with ethanol.
Well, speaking of developing countries, I understand in Brazil in 2001, 10% of their vehicles sold were biofuel or biodiesel, and now 75% of their vehicles sold are biodiesel powered. And we look at that and we say, well, isn't this a great thing? This is a wonderful thing. It's going to hasten our departure and the dependency on foreign oil. But you're seeing another problem that could arise, and that is the competing need for grain to just fuel the fuel economy, right?
Yeah, what we're looking at is an emerging competition between the 800 million people in the world who own automobiles and the 2 billion poorest people in the world for the same food commodities. Almost everything we eat can be converted into fuel for cars. And so as the price of oil goes up, the price of agricultural commodities will be determined by their fuel equivalent or their oil equivalent value.
And so oil goes up, therefore the demand for food goes up that we can use to replace the oil in the cars, therefore there's more, and the price keeps going up.
Right.
It's a crisis we have to deal with. Lester Brown, I appreciate your time. Thank you very much for rearranging your schedule. I'm sorry we missed you last night, and thanks so much for coming back on. The book is Plan B 2.0. Rescuing a Planet Under Stress and a Civilization in Trouble. Our guest has been Lester Brown. It's the Majority Report with John Elliott on the Air America Radio Network. We'll be right back.
The Majority Report on Air America Radio.
A liberal dose of the truth.
It's the best bike vacation ever.
3 days of cycling in the Sierra foothills, camping under the stars, catered gourmet meals, entertainment, and in-camp activities.
It's the 20th annual Emigrant Trails Bike Trek, Friday, September 8th through Sunday, September 10th. This excellent adventure attracts over 400 bicycle riders and helps support Breathe California Sacramento's efforts to improve air quality in our area and to work to eliminate lung disease. Make your plans now and start raising much-needed funds by registering today at sacbreathe.org or by calling 916-444-5900. You can ride as an individual or put together a team of co-workers or friends. Travel at your own pace through stunning scenery, then relax in a camp with massage, yoga, or a beverage from the cantina. Free training rides prepare you for the best bike vacation ever. The 20th Annual Emigrant Trails Bike Trek, September 8th through September 10th. 3 days of cycling, camping, and fun. Go to sacbreathe.org or call 916-444-5900 and sign up today.
It's so hot, Christy Brinkley is now dating Ben and Jerry.
Whoa!
It's so hot today, ladies and gentlemen, George W. Bush told Al Roker to stop doing that. That's what he said. That's what President Bush said at the G8 summit. He was overheard using a dirty language at the G8 summit. And not only that, later he was ejected for headbutting.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
Hey, listen up. What about your future? Are you unhappy with your current job? You want to make great money and get the promotion you deserve? Now's the time. Explore your options. Log on to sackjobs.com and post your resume today. That's sackjobs.com. Post your resume and have local employers find you now. New companies being added each day and hundreds of jobs being added each week. So if you're in the market for a job, sackjobs.com is a click away. At sackjobs.com, you're on your way to a better day.
These are troubled times. We have to think our way out. We can't faith our way out. It's not a coincidence that so much of Bush's base are faith people, because Bush works in mysterious ways. It helps to have faith. It really does. But religion, it stops people from thinking because they think all the answers are in that one book. It impedes progress. It justifies crazy people. Flying planes into a building was a faith-based initiative. Matters of otherwise common sense become points of debate. Like gay marriage, would we even be having this discussion about whether gay people can marry except for religion? Of course the Catholic Church doesn't want gay men to marry. Half the priesthood would walk out the door the first day and marry the UPS driver.
Hey, you streaming listeners, open your media player and click on the link to NoHaggleMortgage.com right now, and you can save thousands on your mortgage loan. Simple, easy, and takes less than 30 seconds. For the first time, homeowners can now have direct access to the same rates that mortgage brokers get. That's right, the same rates that mortgage brokers get. Three things allow NoHaggleMortgage.com to get the lowest mortgage rates in the industry. One, no commissions to pay loan officers. Two, most of the work is done over the internet, saving you a lot of money. 3. No haggling. Click on the link now, then click on Quick Quote to find out what rate you can get. Get your money faster and save thousands. No gimmicks, no middleman, no haggling. Just simple, fast, friendly, low-rate mortgage loans. Skip the loan officer. Go direct to NoHaggleMortgage.com. You're already online. Take 30 seconds and find out for yourself. Or go to NoHaggleMortgage.com. Check it out today. Licensed by the DOC.
Taking some time off, sitting in for Sam Cedar, John Elliott, the most dangerous liberal in America.
Welcome back to the Majority Report on the Air America Radio Network. Congressman Bernie Sanders has the distinction of not only being the lone independent and sometimes one of the few adults in Congress, but also the longest sitting independent in the history of the House of Representatives. It's always a delight to speak with this gentleman. The last time I talked with him, he said, looks like I'm going to have the richest guy in my state going up against me. How are you, Congressman?
Well, I'm fine, John, and I have the richest state guy at my stake going up against me. That was...
And how's he doing? How's he doing? Is he just lavishing?
I don't think he's doing all that well, but, you know, we still got 3.5 months to go.
Let's give your website out right now before I forget, because I think that, you know, we need some. You need some money to compete against this guy, and he's got unlimited resources. So we should, for those that are so inclined and wish to support you with a couple of dollars, how would they do that?
Bernie.org.
Tough one. Bernie.org. Listen, Congress, tell me how surprised you were when it looked like and then came to pass that the President of the United States' very first veto after 6 years was on stem cell research.
Well, nothing, John, nothing in this institution surprises me anymore, nor, and you learn that there's nothing outrageous that you can say anymore, because every day there's something else absurd coming down the line. Now, why should I be shocked that you have a situation where the entire scientific community, virtually the entire medical community, understands the importance of stem cell research to deal with Parkinson's disease, spinal cord injury, diabetes, stroke, heart disease, incredible breakthroughs awaiting
Alzheimer's,
to happen.
Yeah,
Alzheimer's
yeah.
disease, incredible breakthroughs awaiting to happen. The scientific community wants to go forward. The American people want to go forward. Now, why should I be shocked that our president has decided that it is okay in fertilization, in fertilization clinics, that you discard these cells into a trash basket? That's okay, but if it's used for research, it's murder.
Yeah, well, our inspector told us that of the 400,000 or so rejected embryos languishing in the deep freeze in fertility clinics, 128 of them have been adopted. So.
I mean, you know, am I surprised? No, nothing around here really surprises me. This is really very, very sad. Because, you know, you have millions of families that are wrestling and individuals who are wrestling with these illnesses. Scientists say that we can make some important breakthroughs. And you have this president who, once again, continues on his way of discarding science, ignoring science, and goes his merry way appealing to the extreme right wing of this country.
What are your constituents saying to you? I imagine you got calls that said, I can't believe this is going to happen. And when it happened, what was the reaction in
Vermont? Well, you know, in Vermont, I think most people now understand that on the important issues facing America or the world, this president is consistently wrong and appeals to his right wing base. So I don't think there's a great deal of shock, but there is sadness.
Man.
I mean, I just talked last week to people who are doing research in Vermont in various illnesses, who talked to me about the importance of this research for stroke and for diabetes and stuff like that. So there's a great deal of sadness, but not, I think, shock in terms of the behavior of this president.
Now, and you have a state that is fiercely independent. They tend to march to their own drum.
Right.
Which is why you continually get reelected as an independent. They like you. They like the way you represent them.
Well, and I think they also know that right now what we need here in Washington are people to stand up very strongly against what is clearly the most reactionary, incompetent, and corrupt political leadership in the modern history of the United States of America. And, you know, if you look at the issues, John, and it's just incredible, just one of the issues that the American people are concerned about. Economy. Well, what's happening in the economy? Poverty is increasing. Middle class is shrinking. Gap between the rich and the poor is growing wider. Health care. What's happening? 6 million more people have lost their health insurance. Cost of health care is soaring.
Oh, and don't forget the pharma bill. That I think the study shows that by September 22nd, there's 7 million Americans that are Medicare eligible that are going to fall into this no man's land of the donut hole.
Right, right. And this disastrous prescription drug Medicare bill that was written by the pharmaceutical industry, and his refusal, the Republican leadership now, because they're owned by the pharmaceutical industry, is refusing to allow the House and the Senate have both passed, have the votes, and have passed prescription drug reimportation, the ability of pharmacists and prescription drug distributors and individuals to buy the same medicine from abroad at a significantly lower price, and the Republican leadership, it won't give us the votes, go to conference on this, because of the debt they owe to the pharmaceutical industry.
You said to me one time there wasn't a bill that has been brought to the floor of this Congress, on the Tom DeLay Congress, that wasn't bought and paid for before it hit the floor. Now that the
Did I say that? Well, that was a profound and correct statement.
Was it profoundly incorrect?
No, it was profound and correct. Yeah, absolutely right.
Yeah, and now that delay is gone, has there been any difference?
What's going on now? The only difference is, as you know, we come closer to the election, what the Republicans are now doing is going, and that's what the veto of the stem cell research bill was about, is going to their extreme right wing. So while ignoring all of the important issues facing the American people, ignoring the horrendous suffering that is taking place in Iraq, and not acknowledging the enormity of their errors there, what they are doing is bringing forth such very important legislation as the Pledge Protection Act to make sure that the federal courts cannot rule on issues dealing with the Pledge of Allegiance. You got it?
Well, that's a pretty significant piece of legislation,
I mean,
Congressman.
Clearly, the future of America and tens of millions of people are staying up nights worrying about that one. And then we have the Freedom to Display the American Flag Act, because, as you know, nobody can fly the American flag now, right?
Nobody can fly it at all now. And, in fact, I think I understand that this law actually says that you're not only going to be free to fly it, but you're going to be free to fly it actually on your own property.
Well, there you go. And this is, again, obviously, given the problems facing America, another one of the major issues. And
yes,
then we have the ever-popular constitutional amendment to ban same-sex marriage.
Of course.
So this is the time of year when you bring up a lot of stuff that appeals to the right wing, while deflecting attention away from the decline of the
real issues.
Yes.
Yeah, the real issues, the meat and potatoes, the substance.
Right.
Now, I have a question. Clearly, the momentum is on the side of the Democrats, and the Democrats, depending upon which poll you listen to and which pundit you listen to, it's either going to be a huge victory or it's going to be a modest victory, but Republicans in Congress are going to be punished for their stance. I think they're smart. They realize, I mean, no one even questioned whether they're smart, but so I think that perhaps they are smart. I think they see a coming tsunami. In your opinion, are they going to start rushing through pieces of legislation that are going to take the team that gets in there just an extraordinary amount of time to try and unwind it? Are they going to really hurry this crap through?
Not quite so easy to do that stuff, because so long as you can do it in the House, but in the Senate you need to overcome filibusters and all that stuff. So the Democrats have the capability of slowing down things significantly in the Senate, and I trust and hope that they will use that capability. I mean, we're getting out of here, I think, tomorrow in the House. The Senate will be here a little bit longer. Then you got the August recess, and then you're going to come back for 1 month, and you got a lot of appropriations bills yet to deal with and so forth. So they just don't have that much time, given the fact that the Senate has the capability of using its veto power.
I know what you mean. Before I let you go, and I know you're sort of on pins and needles about this vote that's happening. We do appreciate your time taking while waiting for the vote to come up. What is the talk in the corridors? Not in Congress, but in the corridors in Congress about what's happening in Lebanon right now.
Obviously it depends on whom you talk to, but I think it is, I mean, the people that I talk to see it as just a terrible, terrible tragedy in so many ways. It's not just the loss of life on both sides. It's not just the huge amounts of destruction that's taking place in Lebanon. It's that both sides are digging themselves deeper into this never-ending cycle of violence. I mean, you got Hezbollah, and you got Hamas, who, you know, a pledge to destroy Israel, and that's not acceptable. That's not going to work. And then you got the Israelis picking apart and destroying the infrastructure of Lebanon, which is only going to create more Islamic fundamentalists to undermine the government of Lebanon, and that's certainly not going to help the peace process. So it is, to my mind, a very depressing situation. And again, while certainly George Bush did not create the horrors in the Middle East, the fact that we have been so preoccupied in Iraq for 3.5 years and paid relatively little attention in trying to develop a peace process in the Middle East, as difficult, in fact, as that is certainly one of the problems, one of the reasons that the situation is so desperate there right now, I think.
You know, I think you're you're right on that. You're spot on. But you know, when you talk about the peace process, I've never seen anything that George Bush has done, either as a governor of Texas or as a president, that would lead one to believe that he is a man that, believes in peace.
Well,
he doesn't like to negotiate. He doesn't like to meet people partway. He doesn't like to yield on any issues. And I think that transcends not only from his legislative agenda, but, Congressman, it transcends into his foreign policy, which we all know is a complete disaster.
Well, he looks at the world in a very black and white way, good and, you know, and
good and evil. Yeah, good and evil, right?
And unfortunately, you know, the world is a little bit more complicated than that. And certainly the results of his foreign policy and what's going on in Iraq. I mean, you talk about depressing. You have a country there where anybody who has enough money is trying to get out of Iraq as fast as they possibly can. The country is breaking down into civil war. These guys, you know, if you read what they were saying before they went, oh, this thing is going to be over in a couple of months. Our troops will be greeted as saviors and all that stuff. You know, wow.
Right.
I mean, they couldn't have been more wrong.
No, it's a good thing the insurgency is in its last throes, too. No,
that's right. That quote the vice president, right? That's right.
What's the vote you're waiting for tonight?
Just
last-minute cleanup stuff before you leave for tomorrow?
We have one vote that is actually important coming up, and that is whether or not to accept India having nuclear weapons, which I think is a very bad idea.
Well, yes, it is, isn't it? I mean, considering that India is our new friend, and then our newer friends are the Pakistanis who are supposedly helping us in this gigantic war on terror, but we're denying them the right to have it. Meanwhile, their guy Khan has been out, you know, peddling stuff through Dubai and going into India with it.
You got it. I think what you don't need is the proliferation of more nuclear weapons and stuff like that.
Especially when India refuses to sign the Nuclear Non-Proliferation mm-hmm. Agreement.
Right.
Congressman, it's always great to talk to you, sir, and we wish you nothing but the best of success as the fall comes up, and we expect to be talking to you again back in Congress, assuming the position that is rightfully yours for representing the good people of Vermont come November, sir. Thank you very much.
John, thank you very much. Thank you.
It's my pleasure. Congressman Bernie Sanders, the longest-sitting independent congressman in the history of the United States government, and just a hell of a guy. He's the type of guy that you wish you had as your congressman. John Elliott on the Majority Report. I got a ton of calls. I'm going to get to them when we get back. Don't go away. 866-303-2270. On the Majority Report on the Air America Radio Network.
The Majority Report. Slaying right-wing lies with only one weapon. The truth. And charm. And also humor. The Majority Report on Air America Radio.
It's Enid Live. Weekday afternoon.
The Morning Retort with Scott and Sim.
To understand it,
Mitt Romney.
What drives people?
Massachusetts governor.
If he can't protect his own citizens from tunnels, how will he protect you from terrorists? Done. Campaign is dead. See how easy it was?
It was that easy.
See, that's the problem on the left. You're the problem right there. You got all, you think you get all the answers to all the little questions that does not drive a lot of people outside of California, outside of both coasts, outside of California and New York. Northeast. I mean, this is not the world. This is not the center of the universe, Mr. Sims.
Mitt Romney gets the nomination. The tunnels win. Think about it. Tourists, Terra, Earth, tunnels. Do the math, Scott!
It's very erotic. I'm being turned on by all this talk.
Scott and Sims, mornings 5:30 to 9 on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel.
Deanna, how are you? Welcome to the Majority Report. You're on with John Elliott. How are you doing?
Hey, John.
How are you?
Can you hear me?
I sure can.
Oh, great. I really enjoy your commentary. I think you're one of the most intelligent guys on that station.
Thank you very much.
But listen, I got a question for you.
Fire away.
Since about early last week, I've known that the Bush administration doesn't want this war between Lebanon and Israel to stop. And you are saying, who's going to stop it? Well, the answer to that is it's not going to stop. Not till the Bush administration decides it's going to stop.
You're right.
So what do they want? You know, the question is, what do they want? If we find out what Israel and the Bush administration want, and we find out what the timetable is for them to get what they want from this war, then we can find out when the war's going to stop.
It'll be another 6 days.
Huh?
I'm not kidding. It's going to stop in about 6 days. What's today? Today's Wednesday. It's going to stop by next Tuesday or Wednesday. Yeah.
Why?
Because by then there'll be enough world pressure, and by then Israel will feel they will have done enough damage to Hezbollah. That was the plan. The plan was they needed 3 weeks to go in to take out Hezbollah, and things are going according to their plan. And meanwhile, you've got Condi Rice running around Rome doing the Aztec two-step saying, well, we need to do this and we need to do that and we're working on it, we'll try. And all it is a duck and bob and weave to get to the point where by next Tuesday or Wednesday, then Israel will have done what they needed to do in their minds, and then they'll say, okay, world pressure, we'll stop right now. And then they'll have this semi-permanent peace, and we'll see how long that lasts. And in the meantime, the infrastructure of Lebanon, the roads, the harbors, the television stations, all three runways at Beirut Airport, they're all gone. I mean, it's all been blowing up and blowing to bits, and who the hell's going to pay to fund and fix it?
And secondly, this is all for Israel. It's all altruistic on the point of our, you know, our government.
Yeah, you see, I'm pro-Israel, as in Israel has a right to exist and Israel has a right to defend itself. And I'm really against the Hamas and the Hezbollah that want to destroy Israel. And I know that they believe it's their land that's been occupied, and I understand that. But somebody needs to carve out a piece of this globe for Israel. The world has decided by popular vote, being the people that control the world, which were the Brits and the Americans and the Russians and the people back around the end of World War II, around 1947. And that's when Israel was given its independence, and it's been fighting ever since. A lot of people don't realize that one of the reasons Israel is so defensive is the fact that at its narrowest point, it's only 25 miles wide. I mean, yeah, that's a marathon. You can almost run the width of it in 3 or 4 hours with 6 hours or however long it takes these world-class runners. So it's a very small nation, and it needs a right to defend itself. But what it tends to do, in my opinion, is overreact. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, there was the article in the San Francisco Chronicle saying that this had been going on as a plan for 3 years, and they were waiting for the trigger point. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it, Diane. Let's see. Jen, Sacramento. I've only got about a minute to go, but I'm going to start taking you guys' calls after the top of the hour, too, so don't go away. Jen, you're next up. How are you? On the Majority Report with John Elliott. How you doing?
Fine, thank you. I know you got to go really quick, so I'm just going to say this. What's going on with all these wars? Is the design to clear out as many of the poor as they can, and the darker, the more harsh that it is? I mean, we have...
Are you talking darker as in skin color?
Right, because I'm an African American, and I live that type of life all day long with the racism. And look at Darfur. No one's over there trying to stop the genocide. They keep delaying things, just like they're delaying other.
If there was oil in Darfur, we would have been there. All right, I'll talk about this. I want to talk about this because you've hit a nerve with me. I'm going to talk about this at the top of the hour.
I was in the water before I knew what happened. I reached up to stop an or two from going overboard. The next thing I knew, I was overboard too. Watching my boat, there was nothing I could do to avoid being hit. The first time the propeller cut through my back. The second time, it cut my hand and arm. A moment of operator inattention, a lifetime of can't forget. Because I survived, I can tell you how important it is to be responsible on your boat. Visit BoatSmarter.com and remember, if it's your boat, it's your responsibility.
The fact that somebody like Rush Limbaugh, who has made a career preaching that anybody who does drugs has got to go right to jail, do not pass go, no questions asked, right to jail, gets caught doing 30 OxyContin a day. 30 OxyContin? Do you have any idea how high that is? I don't, and I've been pretty high. But, wow, this guy is putting up Elvis numbers, ladies and gentlemen. But how does he get away with it? They say, well, he's on medication. Oh, see, that's not drugs. You know what, pal? We all got our medication, don't we? They can have an ad on TV that said, ask your doctor if Jack Daniels is right for you. And it would not be out of place thematically.
News. I'm Cammie McCormick. The Lebanese Prime Minister did not get what he wanted out of an international meeting on the crisis in the Middle East.
For the past 15 days, we are being pounded every day, and scores of people are dying every day.
Here's reporter Sabita Castelfranco.
Diplomats at a conference on the Middle East held in Rome agreed that the need for a ceasefire is urgent and that an international force is needed for peace to be maintained in the area. But that's as far as they went. There was no agreement on how such a force would be deployed and on what countries would make up the force. And despite the urgency, there was no call for an immediate ceasefire. Sabina Castelfranco, CBS News, Rome.
And the fighting continued, some of the worst so far, with 9 Israeli soldiers killed. Israeli warplanes struck targets in Tyre in southern Lebanon and a Lebanese army base.
I'm Dan Raviv in Tel Aviv. A senior Israeli army general says this war is likely to last several more weeks. While Prime Minister Ehud Olmert, on a visit to towns in the north that have been hit by rockets, says he doesn't intend to announce Israel's plans. In his words, the terrorists will learn the hard way.
A new poll finds most Americans Americans blame both sides for the fighting.
Americans are pessimistic about the current crisis in the Middle East. 61% say in the CBS News New York Times poll that they think it's likely that the conflict between Israel and the Hezbollah militants will spread to the rest of the Mideast.
CBS News Director of Surveys Kathleen Frankovic. Iraq's Prime Minister addressed Congress today and called his country key in the fight against terror. Military commanders are now considering extending the deployment of some U.S. forces as part of the plan to stop the violence in Baghdad. A Houston jury today found Andrea Yates not guilty by reason of insanity in the drowning deaths of her young children. This was her second trial.
She got this verdict this time because jurors focused more during this trial on Yates' mental health and upon the testimony of all those experts who said that Yates clearly did not plan the event or understand in those horrible moments that what she was doing was wrong.
CBS News legal analyst Andrew Cohen. Airfares may be headed even higher. Delta has announced it's increasing domestic fares by $5 each way to cover fuel costs. And don't expect any relief when you fill up at the gas pump. CBS News correspondent Barry Bagnato reports gas prices are not heading south anytime soon.
More than 800 times since 1990, the government has reported the weekly price of gasoline in the U.S. Only once has gas cost more than it does right now, just over $3 a gallon for regular. That's 71% higher than it was just 1 year ago. The Energy Information Administration expects prices to stay at this level at least until after the Labor Day weekend, when demand usually eases. That is, if a major hurricane or other event doesn't disrupt supplies.
On Wall Street, the Dow finished a point lower. This is CBS News.
Yeah, my wife's pregnant, so since she's driving more carefully now, maybe we could get a discount on our rate.
That's a real question that was put to the licensed insurance experts at Progressive Direct. When you call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE, we'll answer your questions and help you find the policy that best fits you. So whether your question's unique or typical...
Will I get a discount if I insure both my cars with you?
In fact, she will. Call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. Progressive Direct Insurance Company and its affiliates, Mayfield Village, Ohio. Available in most states and situations.
I want to let you in on a little secret, but before I do, could all you car dealers, bankers, and credit card companies switch over to the All Sappy Love Songs All Day Long station? Good. For the rest of you, here's the secret. FreeCreditReport.com. If you know your credit score going in, you may be able to cut a better deal on car loans, refis, even credit cards. And you'll find your free credit score and report at FreeCreditReport.com. That's the secret. Get your free credit score and report with enrollment in Triple Advantage at FreeCreditReport.com. Get the score.
The Washington Supreme Court has upheld that state's ban on same-sex marriage. Massachusetts is still the only state where it's legal. Heather Bosch of KIRO has reaction.
It's not the ruling he wanted.
I am very disappointed.
Robert Court says he's gay and the State Defense of Marriage Act is wrong.
To not allow persons of same sex to get married, it just doesn't seem fair or equal.
But as the state Supreme Court upheld the ban on same-sex marriage, it left the door open for the legislature or Washington State voters to change the law one day.
So it'll be an interesting process, to say the least, as to how this is going to work itself out in the end.
Heather Bosch for CBS News, Seattle.
A big cleanup is underway in New Orleans, where the mayor is promising that most of the storm debris left behind by Hurricane Katrina will be cleaned up ahead of the one-year anniversary on August 29th. That includes a lot of flooded-out cars and boats. I'm Cammie McCormick, CBS News.
It's All That Biz with Jim Jacoby on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel. Brought to you by Metro PCS. Here's Jim.
Good Wednesday afternoon, everybody. Well, U.S. stocks changed course and ended up flat as a pancake today after the latest Federal Reserve study of economic conditions around the country underlined inflationary impact of higher energy costs, while a number of regions reported a decline in the overall rate of growth in their economies. On the earnings front, disappointing results from Amazon.com and a weak profit outlook from Boeing overshadowed a more encouraging quarterly report out of General Motors. The Dow Industrial today closed down a whopping 1 point to 11,102, while the Nasdaq slipped just 3 points to 2070. Shares of GM jumped $1.27 to $31.93. The automaker reported sales of $54.5 billion dollars, exceeding the average estimate of about 24 and a half. Check that, 42 and a half billion. The automaker, however, took a quarterly loss exceeding $3 billion due to the expense of paying severance for 34,000 workers. But suggested profit was $1.2 billion. Not bad for GM. Boeing fell $3.80 to $79.95. The aerospace giant lowered its 2006 earnings per share forecast, although it did increase its outlook for next year. Boeing also reported a second quarter loss of $160 million compared to a profit it made a year ago of $566 million. And finally, online retailer Amazon.com plunged, get this, $7.41 all the way down to $26.26. That's a 22% drop after the online retail pioneer posted sharply lower second quarter profit, hurt by the cost of employee stock options and higher operating expenses. On the bond front, well, like the market, they were flat today, with a 10-year bond holding steady at 5.06%. Oil up a smidgen, up 95 cents to $74.70 a barrel. And gold added $3.90 to $621.90 the ounce. This is Jim Jacoby from A.G. Edwards for Sacramento's Left Channel, AM 1320.
All That Biz with Jim Jacoby is heard every weekday on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel, and is brought to you by Metro PCS. Permission to speak freely.
Freedom cannot be forced into existence, nor can it be won through painful struggle.
You're listening to AM 1320 KCTC.
Freedom cannot be bought or sold. It has nothing to do with one's social status. One's profession is of no consequence.
Sacramento's Left Channel.
In order for you to accept yourself as you are and live with your soul at peace, you must simply teach yourself to let it be. Only then will you discover freedom.
And streaming live at 1320LeftChannel.com.
With the words, I bet it's a lot worse down there than it looks up here. You look at this leadership and you just sort of shake your head and say, God, he embarrasses us every time he opens his mouth. Embarrasses himself and he embarrasses us as a country. Forget Natalie Maines, you know. I mean, they can Dixie chick me all they want, you know. It's not working on me. But I did something. I listened to a congressman that was either, I'm sorry, I don't remember who. It's either Indiana or Illinois, and he was questioning downtown Mikey Brown, the fumbling FEMA fool, after this thing had happened, and he said, Mr. Brown, were you aware that the President of the United States failed to declare New Orleans a federal emergency disaster area? And I'm driving along, and I heard that, and I said, what? What did he just say? And there's dead silence. And he said, Mr. Brown, I'm going to repeat my question. Were you aware that the President of the United States did not declare New Orleans as a federal emergency disaster area? There's silence, and he says, yes. As in, I kind of knew that. That made me go home and get online, and I pulled Kathleen Blanco's letter, who is the governor of Louisiana. I pulled her letter to President Bush that was written before, I emphasize before the hurricane hit, saying this hurricane is going to hit. Nagin doesn't have the horses. We don't have the horses at the state level. We are going to need federal help. We need a federal emergency disaster area. We need a federal emergency disaster declared. We need all the help you can give us specifically, and I remember this quote, specifically in the southeast part of the state. Where's New Orleans? Southeast part of the state. The day before the hurricane hit, President Bush said that he is going to declare certain parishes, they're called parishes in Louisiana, as you know, instead of counties, they're going to call parishes. Certain of them are going to be federal emergency disaster areas, and it's going to be, he's sending a person down there, and that person is Michael Brown, who heads up FEMA. And he listed them off alphabetically. And I'm looking at the list, and of course I ignore that, and I go to the bottom list, and I thought, wait, I'm not going to ignore this. Because I want to find out what the hell this is about. So then I Googled around, and I found a map of the state of New Orleans that was divided by parishes. I printed that out, and I took a highlighter. And as I read off a parish, I'd mark it off on the map. And you know what happened? When I was finished, all of the areas that were declared a federal emergency disaster area were away from the coast. They were in the north. None of the areas on the Gulf of Mexico, none of the parishes that bordered on the Gulf of Mexico were federal emergency disaster areas. None of the parishes around New Orleans. Not St. Bernard's Parish, not St. Jefferson Parish, none.
It's All That Biz with Jim Jacoby on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel. Brought to you by Metro PCS. Here's Jim.
Good Wednesday afternoon, everybody. Well, U.S. stocks changed course and ended up flat as a pancake today after the latest Federal Reserve study of economic conditions around the country underlined inflationary impact of higher energy costs, while a number of regions reported a decline in the overall rate of growth in their economies. On the earnings front, disappointing results from Amazon.com and a weak profit outlook from Boeing overshadowed a more encouraging quarterly report out of General Motors. The Dow Industrial today closed down a whopping 1 point to 11,102, while the Nasdaq slipped just 3 points to 2070. Shares of GM jumped $1.27 to $31.93. The automaker reported sales of $54.5 billion, exceeding the average estimate of about $42.5 billion. The automaker, however, took a quarterly loss exceeding $3 billion due to the expense of paying severance for 34,000 workers, but its adjusted profit was $1.2 billion. Not bad for GM. Boeing fell $3.80 to $79.95. The aerospace giant lowered its 2006 earnings per share forecast, although it did increase its outlook for next year. Boeing also reported a second quarter loss of $160 million compared to a profit it made a year ago of $566 million. And finally, online retailer Amazon.com plunged, get this, $7.41 all the way down to $26.26. That's a 22% drop after the online retail pioneer posted sharply lower second quarter profit, hurt by the cost of employee stock options and higher operating expenses. On the bond front, well, like the market, they were flat today, with a 10-year bond holding steady at 5.06%. Oil up a smidgen, up 95 cents to $74.70 a barrel. And gold added $3.90 to $621.90 the ounce. This is Jim Jacoby from A.G. Edwards for Sacramento's Left Channel, AM 1320.
All That Biz with Jim Jacoby is heard every weekday on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left.
It's the best bike vacation ever.
3 days of cycling in the Sierra foothills, camping under the stars, catered gourmet meals, entertainment, and in-camp activities.
It's the 20th annual Emigrant Trails Bike Trek, Friday, September 8th through Sunday, September 10th. This excellent adventure attracts over 400 bicycle riders and helps support Breathe California Sacramento's efforts to improve air quality in our area and to work to eliminate lung disease. Make your plans now and start raising much-needed funds by registering today at sacbreathe.org or by calling 9-
916-444-5900. You can ride as an individual or put together a team of co-workers or friends. Travel at your own pace through stunning scenery, then relax in a camp with massage, yoga, or a beverage from the cantina. Free training rides prepare you for the best bike vacation ever. The 20th Annual Immigrant Trails Bike Trek, September 8th through September 10th. 3 days of cycling, camping, and fun. Go to sacbreeze.org or call 916-444-5900 and sign up today.
You join think? The red tag revolution, are you?
I am going to join it. I'm joining it. Thanks, Bill.
Bye.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much. John Elliott sitting in for Janine Garofalo and Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the Air America Radio Network. Don't forget, you can go to johntalk.com, J-O-N-T-A-L-K, johntalk.com. Click on chat. Get on the chat room. Tell us what you think. We'll keep up with it during the show, and we'll come right back at you. We've got lots more calls. Kristen, Michael, Elaine, Rick, Debbie, we're going to get to your calls as soon as we come back. John Elliott, 866-303-2270. There's way more show to go.
America under attack. They can break the rules, dismantle the courts, and feed at the corporate trough.
People like this are a menace to decent society.
But they can't stop the Majority Report on Air America Radio.
It's the Morning Retort with...
It's the best bike vacation ever. 3 days of cycling in the Sierra foothills, camping under the stars, catered gourmet meals, entertainment, and in-camp activities. It's the 20th Annual Immigrant Trails Bike Trek, Friday, September 8th through Sunday, September 10th. This excellent adventure attracts over 400 bicycle riders and helps support Breathe California Sacramento's efforts to improve air quality in our area and to work to eliminate lung disease. Make your plans now and start raising much-needed funds by registering today at sacbreathe.org or by calling 9- 916-444-5900. You can ride as an individual or put together a team of co-workers or friends. Travel at your own pace through stunning scenery, then relax in a camp with massage, yoga, or a beverage from the cantina. Free training rides prepare you for the best bike vacation ever. The 20th Annual Immigrant Trails Bike Trek, September 8th through September 10th. 3 days of cycling, camping, and fun. Go to sacbreeze.org or call 916-444-5900 and sign up today.
Edwards for Sacramento's Left Channel, AM 1320.
All That Biz with Jim Jacoby is heard every weekday on AM 1320, Sacramento's Left Channel, and is brought to you by Metro PCS. Permission to speak freely.
You'd go.
The odds of you being killed by a terrorist are practically zero. So I say relax and enjoy the show. You have to be a realist. You have to be realistic about terrorism. Certain groups of people, certain groups, Muslim fundamentalists, Christian fundamentalists, Jewish fundamentalists, and just plain guys from Montana, are going to continue to make life in this country very interesting for a long, long time. That's the reality. Angry men in combat fatigues talking to God on a two-way radio and muttering incoherent slogans about freedom are eventually going to provide us with a great deal of entertainment, especially after your stupid economy collapses all around you and the terrorists come out of the woodwork. You'll have anthrax in the water supply, the sarin gas in your air conditioners. There'll be chemical and biological suitcase bombs in every city. And I say, enjoy it. Relax. Enjoy the show. Take a chance. Put a little fun in your life.
Freedom cannot be forced into existence, nor can it be won through painful struggle.
You're listening to AM 1320 KCTC.
Freedom cannot be bought or sold. It has nothing to do with one's social status. One's profession is of no consequence.
Sacramento's Left Channel.
In order for you to accept yourself as you are and live with your soul at peace, you must simply teach yourself to let it be. Only then will you discover freedom.
And streaming live at 1320leftchannel.com.
Majority Report is taking some time off, sitting in for Sam Cedar, John Elliott, the most dangerous liberal in America.
Welcome back to the Majority Report. We're discussing Katrina. We're discussing Katrina and what I really believe it was. Debbie, New Hampshire, how are you? Welcome to the Majority Report. You're on the air with John Elliott on the Air America Radio Network. How are you, Debbie?
I'm doing fine, sir. How are you?
Fine. It's not sir. Not sir. It's John, please.
Yes.
Wait, if you want to hear somebody called sir, wait till the end of this week. We're going to have Michael Shearer on. No matter how many times I tell him to not call me sir, wait till you hear how many times he calls me sir. I finally said to him at a break, Michael, stop with this sir stuff. He said, well, it's a product of a Marine father and a Jesuit upbringing.
Yes. It's a product of my Southern upbringing. So I do apologize. I didn't mean anything awful by it.
So you're not a Connecticut Yankee, huh?
No, I'm not. I'm actually a Thibodeau from Louisiana. I actually had to move in order to find work with my degrees from LSU. One thing that I was telling your screener was that I have friends and family, of course, all down along the southern region of Louisiana, and both were hit by Katrina and Rita. With Katrina, a friend of mine actually lives in LaPlace, which is on the other side of Lake Pontchartrain from New Orleans.
Except from Slidell, right? Just by Slidell, yeah.
Right, a little bit further out than that. And what she found happening, since they were the staging area for all this stuff going into New Orleans originally when it finally got there after all of that time off, there were people who are from my region of the country who actually understand what it is to run around in a flat-bottom boat so that you don't hit the stumps.
Yes.
And also, the buses that were coming in and the food supplies by the 18-wheeler truckload, and they were being turned away by the federal government.
By FEMA,
and they weren't taking these things and saying that they couldn't allow these people in. They were actually taking these people who had come in with all of this help and all this volunteer effort, and they were turning them away and telling them to go home. That was one of the first things they did. Which was egregious.
Well, they, you know, nobody needed any help. What were they doing? I mean, the government had it under control. They knew what was going on. You know, I have to tell you, I talked to, right after this happened, I talked to Senator Bennett Johnston. He I'm sure, as you know, he served Louisiana with great distinction for 24 years. And his daughter lives just off Lake Pontchartrain. And I talked to him and asked him how things were going. And he said, well, she was one of the lucky ones. She was able to get out. And our hearts collectively went out to the people in New Orleans who could not get out. And David Brinkley has a new book out. He's laying a lot of the blame squarely on Ray Nagin. But you know what? If Ray Nagin was given all of the tools that he might have thought he could have had, it still wouldn't have been enough. You know, this is what we need government for. Government needs to be there. As much as the Republicans out there want to tell us we want smaller government, smaller government, smaller government, well, a couple of things. One, this is the biggest government we've ever had in the history of the world. There are more people working for this government or working on government outsourced projects than any other government, including Clinton. In fact, Clinton reduced the number of people working in the Bush, the one administration, and now Bush the two has amped that back up. And with all of the king's horses and all the king's men, they still were sitting there, and they still, you know, it wasn't as if they failed.
It's
like they didn't even try to fail. I mean, they didn't even get in there and go bump in the night. They just were so incompetent, and it just, God, it makes me nuts. It must make you crazy.
Yes.
Thanks.
It's amazing the level of destruction. I actually went back home for Christmas right after all of the hurricanes had hit. And what I ended up seeing when I drove along the coast was utter devastation. It's wiped clean. And here we are, you know, in the beginnings of another hurricane season, which is very serious to the people along the Gulf Coast.
Oh, yeah.
And these guys have absolutely no clue about what they still have left behind. Living an entire summer without air conditioning in the deep south is worse than torture because of the humidity levels and the heat.
That's
and these
brutal.
People living in tents are considered by the Republicans who are in power at this moment and by some of the Democrats who are disguising themselves as people who just don't know how to get themselves together.
Yeah.
And
I've talked to a couple of them.
Have to go through that and be able to lose everything in their life and be able to say at that point that they have all of the gumption and the ability to be able to jump up and be able to do something about it right after it happens.
I know. We'll keep an eye and see what happens this year, but I don't hold my hopes up for something comes in, even a Category 2, it's going to be tough. Debbie, thanks very much for the call. I appreciate it. I only have 1 minute to go, and then I'm going to have Larry Beinhardt on the program. He's written this book called Fog Facts. Here's a quote, and you might think about Bush when you think about this. Guess Bush has told us some lies, and some really outrageous lies, and some really, really, really outrageous lies. Here's a quote. Even though the facts which prove the liars are lying are brought out clearly, the people will still doubt their liars and still think there must be some other explanation. The thing is really outrageous lies is that even after they've been completely nailed as falsehoods, they're still out there and believed. All the expert liars in the world and all who conspire together in the art of lying know it. Adolf Hitler, Mein Kampf. We'll be right back. Majority Report. John Elliott, Air America Radio Network. Do not go away. You need to listen to this.
The Majority Report on Air America Radio.
You're listening to AM 13.
It's the best bike vacation ever. 3 days of cycling in the Sierra foothills, camping under the stars, catered gourmet meals, entertainment, and in-camp activities. It's the 20th annual Emigrant Trails Bike Trek, Friday, September 8th through Sunday, September 10th. This excellent adventure attracts over 400 bicycle riders and helps support Breathe California Sacramento's efforts to improve air quality in our area and to work to eliminate lung disease. Make your plans now and start raising much-needed funds by registering today at sacbreathe.org or by calling 916-444-5900. You can ride as an individual or put together a team of co-workers or friends. Travel at your own pace through stunning scenery, then relax in a camp with massage, yoga, or a beverage from the cantina. Free training rides prepare you for the best bike vacation ever. The 20th Annual Immigrant Trails Bike Trek, September 8th through September 10th. 3 days of cycling, camping, and fun. Go to sacbreathe.org or call 916-444-5900 and sign up today.
New companies being added each day and hundreds of jobs being added each week. So if you're in the market for a job, sackjobs.com is a click away. At sackjobs.com, you're on your way to a better day.
You know something? There's nothing wrong with a culture where everyone has a different idea of what's humorous. The last time I can remember an entire nation being on the same page, it was Germany in the late 30s, and it didn't really turn out that funny. Remember, in its time and place, what Hitler said was considered politically correct. And it's that blind adherence to what is situationally palatable that is truly dangerous. We should question it all, poke fun at it all, rail against it all, and most importantly, for Christ's sake, laugh at it all. Because the only thing separating Holy Writ from complete digital is your perspective. It's your only weapon. Keep the safety off. Don't take yourself too seriously. Remember that at the end of the day, this is just an ant farm with beepers, and it takes zero politically correct society to screw in a light bulb because they are perpetually in the dark. Of course, that's just my opinion. I could be wrong.
I guess the only people that have to be really, really happy about all this news about a war is the Catholic Church. Oh, yeah, they got to be happy because they're off the front page of the paper for the first time in a long time. Woo! Woo! And I am a recovering Catholic. Some of you are here tonight, yes? So I've been following this story. I went to 16 years of Catholic education. I'm lucky I'm alive. I went to Our Lady of Psychological Warfare. I've always felt that if women have to be in the military, they should only be lesbians. Because we would never get around to having a war. Right? Because we'd have to have some meetings. A war in October? What about the softball banquet?
Hey, you streaming listeners, open your media player and click on the link to NoHaggleMortgage.com right now, and you can save thousands on your mortgage loan. It's simple, easy, and takes less than 30 seconds. For the first time, homeowners can now have direct access to the same rates that mortgage brokers get.
That's right, the same rates that mortgage brokers get.
Three things allow NoHaggleMortgage.com to get the lowest mortgage rates in the industry. One, no commissions to pay to loan officers. Two, most of the work is done over the internet, saving you a lot of money. Three, no haggling. Click on the link now, then click on Quick Quote to find out what rate you can get. Get your money faster and save thousands. No gimmicks, no middleman, no haggling. Just simple, fast, friendly, low-rate mortgage loans. Skip the loan officer. Go direct to NoHaggleMortgage.com. You're already online. Take 30 seconds and find out for yourself. Or go to NoHaggleMortgage.com. Check it out today. Licensed by the DOC.
Fascinating book in my hands, Fog Facts, Searching for Truth in the Land of Spin. Nugget after nugget after nugget of real truths backed up that you know about and we know about, but we really didn't know about it because it's sort of somehow become somewhat urban legend because the mainstream media is ignoring it. And somebody chose not to ignore it, and that somebody is with us today. Larry Beinart's award-winning novelist, lives in upstate New York. He's also the author of Wag the Dog, a book that has become almost a verb now, hasn't it?
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm fine, Larry. How are you?
Good. That was a great introduction. Thank you.
Well, you're most welcome. This is one of those that when I picked it up, I said, God, I'm glad somebody did this.
Oh, well, thank you.
You know, because it's just all of the things. I mean, you've got the quote from Hitler that I read at the end of the hour, at the end of the half hour going into this. And, you know, talking about how Dick Cheney got rich and, you know, this poor boy goes to Wyoming, from Wyoming goes to Washington and, you know, he's just a poor little guy working there and, you know, as a congressman. And the next thing you know, the accounting practices he had at Halliburton are subject to a lawsuit.
it's a fascinating story, and I think it's an important story because we've come up with this methodology of bribery in reverse. Where
yes.
You do the services first, and then when you leave government, they give you a job that brings you millions of dollars. And because we've reversed the sequence, it's completely legal.
Yeah, that's the guy that did the pharma's bidding and wrote the prescription drug medical program after being lobbied by Big Pharma. And actually, before it was passing, he was interviewing and became the head guy for $2 million a year running their lobbying.
Right, and that's been happening across the board. Sometimes people slip up and take it over the line into illegality, like the woman who did the Boeing contracts and then ended up at Boeing. And she got prosecuted for it. But
that's almost as bad as
Dick
Cheney.
Will never be prosecuted for it, and he made, you know, between $40 and $100 million doing it.
Yeah, with Enron-style accounting, as you point out. And here's a quote in here that Halliburton overstated revenues by $445 million from 99 through the end of 2001. And I think he was in the saddle then.
Yes,
and
he was.
The Judicial Watch lawsuit was dismissed. They were considering an appeal. Halliburton said, we'll settle the shareholder lawsuits here, $6 million. Have a nice day. Go to the SEC, write them out a check for $7.5 million as a penalty, and everybody goes on.
Actually, that the judge threw out that settlement. And that lawsuit is back now.
Oh, that's good. That's
yeah,
good.
No, and Cheney's being named as a witness. He's not being named as a defendant.
Of course not.
That lawsuit has returned, and I'm looking forward to it.
I'm looking forward to it, too. And I'm so glad you point out in here his biggest mistake was the acquisition of Dresser Industries. And Dresser Industries is a long-standing, you know, similar based oil services industry. And that also crossed, if you go back in Kevin Phillips' book, where he went back in history over the Bush family tree, and the Dresser industry people were pretty much tied to that, the Bush family all the way along. And here what he did, and this was supposed to be his crowning achievement as CEO, is doing this merger. And what he did is guarantee that Halliburton had the biggest liability for asbestos of any company in the history of the planet. And
right.
I thought, you know, nice shooting, Tex. You know,
the reason the Dick Cheney getting rich story is in the book, and the reason the story of what's our president's name? George W. Bush.
The reason
George Bush's financial history is in the book is because when they came into office, they did exactly the same things in office that they had done when they're in private business. Now, we were all told that this was going to be a great thing, but that's because nobody looked at what they actually did in private business. And one of the things that George Bush did that I found was very interesting was when he was in business, they started taking things off the books. So when they had a loss, what they would do is they would make a phony company and sell the losses to the phony company, which got it off the books of Harkin Energy, which is where he was when he was doing this. And so now, when these guys present the federal budget, And they say, well, you know, it's going to look really bad because our liabilities are too great. They go ahead and they simply leave things like the war in Iraq and Afghanistan off the books.
Yeah, when we look at the budget, and they were out there last week crowing about how well things are going and how it was going to be a $400 billion deficit, but it's now not going to be. It's going to be only $290 billion. We're doing such a great job, and it's all as a result of these wonderful toys called tax cuts. And the reality is that doesn't include the money for the war in Iraq. Hello?
Right. Right, and
off-balance sheet accounting, we used to call it in the public world business.
and the amazing thing is, you know, it gets noticed, right? You know,
oh, yeah.
The New York Times said, oh, but you know, by the way, this budget's a little bit phony. They left the cost of the war off it, and it didn't cause them to change anything.
No,
they just said, yep, we did. So what?
But they did this so what on Halliburton. They did this so what on Halliburton after the war. Everybody said, well, we're going to need to get in there and we're going to need to do something. And Halliburton suddenly got this bid, and the bid being a no-bid bid.
Right.
And the other companies, even the rascals that are out there, the Bechtels and the Fluors, they're crying foul. And we're basically told, don't worry. The vice president was not running your company. This is for Dick. Don't worry, you'll get yours. Now, it'll come through Halliburton. And then there's all these horror stories of Halliburton. Once they get this no-bid contract, they just do what they want. They
right.
overcharge. They charge for carrying, what was this, sailboat fuel? Remember that? They're charged for carrying sailboat fuel, empty truckloads. And they actually put it down as sailboat fuel. And they got paid millions of dollars. And the government finds out and says, you shouldn't do that. They say, yeah, that's right. And they say, okay, well, let's renew the contract.
Well, actually, that's a fascinating story, because once they did that, Congress put new regulations on Iraqi reconstruction, and they were fairly sensible restrictions that they had that if a contract was over $10 million, there had to be a competitive bidding. And the CPA, Coalition Provisional Authority, actually had to keep track of who the money went to. Now, the minute Congress did that, the Coalition Provisional Authority, led by Paul Bremer, simply stopped spending the money that had been authorized by Congress. And they had another pile of money. This is actually my favorite. This is kind of the only really fun story that's come out of the entire Bush administration and certainly out of the Iraq war. They had another hunk of money there. And in the end, it totaled about $20 billion. Not million. $20 billion. Because they had taken over oil for food from the UN. As soon as we took over Iraq, we got control of the oil for food money. They had control over...
That was reason number 17 for going to war, by the way, is the abuse of the oil for food money that he was actually... So Hussein was taking the oil money and keeping it for himself and building lavish palaces and not giving the money
right.
for the food to... Yeah, so we
so
did.
Anyway, they got control of this money, and they were supposed to hold it in trust for Iraq to turn it over once Iraq had a functioning government. But there was actually nobody watching this money. The Congress had no control of it. They stopped spending the money they had to report on and started spending the money they didn't have to report
on.
And they went through, of that $20 billion, they apparently went through 19...
Now, I mean, where did it go?
Nobody knows.
Yeah.
Nobody knows, and it certainly didn't reconstruct Iraq, because Iraq is not reconstructed. They were flying plane loads of $100 bills out of a bank in East Rutherford, New Jersey. I don't know why it was East Rutherford, New Jersey, but that's what showed up. Okay, they're flying plane loads of $100 bills into Iraq, and then they were handing them out. They were handing them out in suitcases to Army majors. And saying, you know,
Major, go build a hospital over there, will you?
Go reconstruct Iraq.
Yeah.
And these guys never had to account for the money. And, you know, it's wonderful. I mean, I'm sure there, you know, I mean,
Now, nobody ever took it. No one ever took a dime. I mean, we know that. We know that these were honest, straightforward people that got suitcases full of... Hey, you need another suitcase? Here. You got an extra hand. Here. Here's an extra suitcase of money. Build another hospital.
So, I mean, I'm sure, you know, like lots of guys shipped Humvees home in steamer trunks and have built swim. Who knows where that money went? So that's a fun story. And the thing that kind of amazes me about it is that it is such a fun story. It is the kind of story you would think that
would make
a New York
go
Post
crazy.
Or a Daily News or a CNN or a Fox News or, you know, kind of anybody would, jump on with both feet.
Yeah, this is delicious. Let's just run with this.
Yeah, I mean, this makes, you know, Don Corleone pale by comparison. Don Corleone never got his hands on $19.5 billion.
Can you imagine? I look at this book and
You missed an opportunity here. You know, you should have gone to Iraq a couple of years ago, and you could have been rich.
Yeah. You know, what was I doing?
I don't know. What were you doing?
I have to think back. I mean, it was in the fog of war. Oh, yeah. I'm reading this book, and I'm coming up with these great things that we know, but then we didn't know because we forgot. And this is on Election Day. George Bush appeared to have taken Florida by a few hundred votes, and this is the 2000 election you're referring to. And then you say the law in Florida was actually quite simple and direct. And here is the entire law. If the returns for any office reflect that a candidate was defeated or eliminated by 0.5% or less of the votes cast for such office, the board responsible for certifying the results of the vote on such race or measure shall order a recount of the votes cast with respect to such office or measure. That's pretty clear, huh?
Yeah, that sounds astonishingly clear to me. I mean, you know, considering it's a law, it's very clear. And it should have kicked in, and they should have had a statewide recount. And, you know, we all recall what happened was the Supreme Court stopped the various recounts. And here, again, this is the amazing part to me, and it's what triggered the whole idea of fog facts, was that afterward, a lot of people in the news business said, hey, this is a really interesting story, and it's a really important story. We should know who actually got more votes in Florida. And so they got together. It was the New York Times, Washington Post, the Tribune Company.
Let's do a post-mortem, right? Yeah.
Oh, and St. Petersburg Times and CNN and a few of the Wall Street Journal, and they all chipped in. And they came up with $1 million, which is a big chunk of change to do one news story. And they formed a consortium and sat down and recounted all the controversial votes. And they found a very interesting thing is as they were going along, they found there were not only just what's called undervotes, which is what we had heard about the hanging chad.
The hanging chads, right.
And what a hanging chad is some of these voting booths. What you do is you stick a little poker through a hole, and that knocks out a piece of paper, and then that piece of paper goes through a machine, and if there's a hole in it, it counts it as a vote.
Right.
Now sometimes the little poker doesn't knock the paper all the way out; it knocks it partially out. And in that case, you have a hanging piece of paper, which is called a chad. And Florida law is very straightforward. It's you judge the ballot. If you can judge the intent of the voter,
right,
that's what you're supposed to do.
So if you've got five holes or possible holes and one of them is poked through and it's just dangling, that's what the person wanted.
Pretty straightforward. All right.
Yeah.
And those are called undervotes because there was a vote there, but you look at it. And it was thrown out, but if you look at it closely, you can see what the intent was, so you count it. If you count only the undervotes, George Bush wins. However, as they were going along, they discovered something else. There was something called overvotes. And overvotes are when you voted, and oddly enough, they were mostly for Al Gore. And what happened was people would do the check mark for Al Gore and then handwrite Al Gore in.
Right.
Right? Because they were so enthusiastic in voting for Al that they
want to make sure.
Well, the machines don't understand that. They throw it out.
Yeah.
And of course, they said, well, they've got two votes here. It doesn't count. But obviously, if you look at it, and you punch Al Gore and you write Al Gore, the intent of the vote is clear, and then you count the vote. If you count the undervotes and the overvotes, Al Gore won. Period.
And everybody said, oh, that's a good story. Listen, did the Yankees win tonight? I mean, what's really happening?
No,
right? I mean,
no, they did something even more peculiar than that.
What did they do?
They all wrote headlines that says Bush won. Or recount shows Bush would have won. Or recount shows Supreme Court had no influence. And if you take, I mean, the five or seven different headlines are in the book. And every single, and I have to tell you the truth. I remember when the story came out. I remember reading it because I was looking forward to it for a year. Like, yeah, we're going to finally find out. I read the story in the New York Times. I walked away with the impression that Bush had won. It was only a few years later, I was reading an article by Gore Vidal. And Gore said, you know, if you go to paragraph 5, there's this twisted sentence that admits that Al Gore won.
Yeah.
And I went, I spent my $1.25 or $1.75 or whatever it is to buy the article online. And I looked at it very carefully, and sure enough,
you're absolutely right.
That it admits that Al Gore got more votes in Florida. They buried it in paragraph 5. and in, you know, both, and the first four paragraphs tell you how Bush won, and the closing paragraphs told you how Bush won. And
but in the middle, they told you that Al Gore won.
And, but and they did it in such twisted prose that you really have to kind of take it apart like a mathematician to understand what they said. And the New York Times, oddly enough, is the worst offender.
Yeah. The book is Fog Facts. Book is Fog Facts. It's fascinating. You can pick it up. You don't have to sit and read it all at one sitting. You can pick it up and read it and put it down and read it. It's called Fog Facts, Searching for Truth in the Land of Spin. Larry Beinart has been our guest author, also of The Wag, The Dog, and The Librarian. Larry, thanks a million. Great insight, great book. Thanks a million. John Elliott on the Majority Report, Air America Radio Network, chuckling along here on a Wednesday evening. We'll be right back. We're going to get serious. We're going to talk about some serious stuff. I mean, what could be? I mean, it was fun. I mean, Gore won, but Bush is there. It's okay. It's okay. Nothing. Has he done anything? We'll be right back.
The Majority Report on Air America Radio, giving you your daily dose of real American values.
It's the Randy Rhoads Show.
Los Angeles, where I believe the official sunscreen is now lead, isn't it, pretty much? Oh, my God, this heat. I was sweating like Naomi Campbell trying to hire a maid. It was so hot today. Woo! It was so hot in Hollywood today. Brad and Angelina adopted Ben and Jerry. Did you know that? It was so hot in Encino, Michael Jackson actually stopped at a young boy's lemonade stand and just bought the lemonade. You know the worst part about this heat wave across the country is Al Gore walking around going, I told you so. Actually, if Al Gore's movie on global warming is correct, as you know, the ice caps are shrinking. You all know about that. The glaciers are shrinking. And the only thing not shrinking, Al Gore, apparently. Have you seen Al?
Really
not shrinking. I tell you, the heat, it puts people in a bad mood. You know, in fact, coming into work today, people were swearing like President Bush near an open mic. It was unbelievable.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
At Cache Creek Casino Resort, win fast, win often with Cash Fever Jackpot. Jackpots start at $20,000 and are guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Every time a Cash Fever Jackpot hits, a Cash Club player wins just for playing with their card. Plus, you can check the Cash Fever Jackpot total and your Cash Club points online now at CashCreek.com. So join Cash Club today and get the fever. Cache Creek Casino Resort.
John Elliott back. Air America Radio Network. Just when you thought the President of the United States did not have his priorities straight, comes this news. Now, this is serious, ladies and gentlemen. This Friday, the day after tomorrow, the President is going to be in the White House, and there are two sets of guests that he is entertaining. The first is the winner of American Idol. I'm not kidding. This is a guy that got 63 million votes. 4 million more than Bush got, by the way. And 61.5 million more than he deserved to get. Well, we're going to have all the American Idol finalists. They're going to get a private tour of the White House. They're going to have a photo op session with the president. Pretty good stuff, huh? Oh, and then he's got another guest, Tony Blair. Oh, by the way, Tony, he's going to be talking about fighting in the Middle East, the insurgency in Iraq, the insurgency in Afghanistan, the effort to stop Iran from building a nuclear bomb, the genocide in Darfur. Just those things. But let's get the American Idol people in. Don't go away. Majority Report, John Elliott. We're coming back. Hour number three. It is going to be a great hour.
On the state of our war against the American people.
we're mounting a sustained campaign to crack down on every American and every person of every faith and every nation, and to bring them to justice. All missions are being executed according to plan, without warning or provocation. Americans are being swept up in an international dragnet. Thousands of FBI agents are on the trail of other citizens here and abroad. It has everything to do with hate and evil and murder and prejudice. America's strong, strong, strong.
Federal agents, we are armed!
AM 1320 KCTC, Sacramento's Left Channel. Left Channel.
And streaming live at 1320leftchannel.com.
CBS News, I'm Cammie McCormick. International leaders failed to come up with a ceasefire plan, and the Mideast conflict grew deadlier. 9 Israeli soldiers were killed today in ground battles with Hezbollah guerrillas in South Lebanon.
We never assumed, never thought for a second this was going to be easy war. Hezbollah is not a ragtag terrorist force, it's a terrorist army. We are encountering the type of resistance we expected.
Israeli Defense Force spokesman Michael Orr and now Israeli commanders say the fighting could last several more weeks. Stranded Americans tried to make it out today. It was very dangerous. CBS News correspondent Lee Cowan found out as he traveled with them.
This is what passes for the cavalry these days in southern Lebanon. A convoy of Americans in rusted out Mercedes, minibuses, and taxi cabs, all out to rescue other stranded Americans at the border. But getting to them meant getting a deal from Israel to allow us safe passage. At best, the window would be brief. Israel's bombing campaign hasn't let up a bit.
This young American made it out safely, but with regrets.
I'm happy to be going back to America, but what's not nice about it is part of my family is here, so we're going to leave them and go to America. So that's bad about it.
Iraq's Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki appeared before Congress today, promising to be a partner with the U.S. in the fight against terror.
Maliki said his country will prevail and said Iraq and the U.S. are allies. Their struggle against terrorism, he told Congress through an interpreter, is tied together.
Iraq and America both need each other to defeat the terror.
Democratic Senator Dick Durbin says Americans want to hear a different message from Iraq.
To be willing to stand and fight to defend their own country so American soldiers can start coming home.
While Maliki said his battle is with terrorists, Durbin says the facts on the ground show Iraq is actually being dragged into civil war. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Saddam Hussein was back in court today after his hunger strike. He brought his own lunch, but not his attorneys, who were still boycotting the proceedings.
In court, Saddam Hussein was very defiant. He questioned the authority of the court, suggesting it was just an American-led farce. At one point, he urged Iraqis not to kill each other, to kill Americans instead. And again, he says if he gets the death penalty, he wants to be shot because he's a soldier and not hanged as though he were just a civilian.
CBS News correspondent Mark Strassman in Baghdad. A jury in Houston today found Andrea Yates not guilty by reason of insanity in the drowning deaths of her young children. CBS News correspondent Steve Futterman was there.
Andrea Yates will now go to a mental institution. There is no certainty how long she will remain there. Almost everyone agrees it will be a very long time. It could conceivably be the rest of her life. But if Yates is able to show that she is no longer a threat, there is the possibility that she could be released.
Some of the jurors said they struggled over the wording of the verdict, wanting to find her guilty but insane. On Wall Street, the Dow finished off a point. This is CBS News.
Where do you want to be?
I'd like a real estate website where I can look at all the listings, not just those of a single company.
I'll know the right house when I see it, but it's frustrating having to go from website to website. I'm wearing out my mouse.
Find your perfect place. It's easy at REMAX.com. Now REMAX.com has more home listings to choose from than ever. REMAX listings and our competitors' listings, too. Nobody sells more real estate than REMAX. Each office independently owned and operated.
CompUSA email bag.
Lisa emails, Dear CompUSA, I need a great camera, but I'm a student, so I also need a great deal. Okay, Lisa, how about $120 off a 5-megapixel Kodak EasyShare digital camera? That's right, $120 off. That puts it under $130 after savings and rebate, our lowest price ever. That and hundreds more back-to-school deals are good through Saturday at CompUSA. We got it, we get it. See store for details.
There's a debate over whether Medicare should pay doctors based on their performance. Would such a system really improve health care quality? Britain has tried it, as CBS News correspondent Barry Bagnato reports.
The better you do your job, the more you should be paid. That's the theory behind Britain's pay-for-performance system for doctors. A New England Journal of Medicine study finds doctors in many cases are exceeding quality standards and pocketing an average of more than $40,000 a year in extra income as a result. A similar system is being considered for Medicare providers here in the States.
Congress heard today from emergency room personnel who testified there's no quick fix for the problems plaguing the emergency medical system. They described emergency rooms overflowing on even quiet days and said in an emergency, they would not be able to cope. And airfares may be heading higher again. Delta announced this week it's raising domestic fares by $5 each way. I'm Cammy McCormick, CBS News.
The following.
Hey, Claire Watkins.
John Elliott sitting in for Sam Cedar. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate you taking your time on a Wednesday evening. We are on the Air America Radio Network. You can chat with us. You can go to johntalk.com, J-O-N-T-A-L-K, johntalk.com. Hit on chat. Get on the chat room. Kristen, Phoenix, Arizona, have been very, very patient. Thank you very much. You're part of that brand new Air America affiliate that we are so proud of, that those guys worked so hard to put on the air after the first one went bump in the night and was sold to a Christian broadcasting group. So we are so...
Can you believe that?
Yeah, well, you know...
I guess I can, but I was just... I was lost for March, you know. I had no... There was no sense of reality anywhere. And then...
Well, you live in Phoenix. You live in Phoenix, and it rose again.
Pardon me?
You live in Phoenix, and Air America rose again.
Yes, they did.
Yeah. How are you?
I'm doing all right. You know, gosh, you talked about so much. And when I first called, I wanted to talk about the Condoleezza Rice, you know, doing her little two-step over there. And I had to agree with you so much on that. You know, I don't think we want this to stop over there. You know, with this,
we want it to stop, you and me. You and me, we want it to stop.
Right, but
Bush, no, Bush does not want it to stop.
And I think
the neocons don't want it to stop. You know, here's the thing with the neocons. You have to look at the neocons. When they want turmoil and they want war, is anybody in their family missing a meal, not having a pillow to go to sleep on, not going to school? Are they missing a tennis lesson? Are they missing a golf tournament? Nobody is, nobody's missing anything. Everything in their life is fine, and they've just, you know, it's like somebody that's walked into a classroom, thrown a stink bomb in, and closed the door. They walk away, no harm, no foul. It doesn't affect them, but it gets them where they want to be, which is to the neocons, it's to control the world. It's the imperialism, and I'm not making this up. You can go on PNAC, you know, the Project for the New American Century, and research that and see the dates on the... Oh, God, it's frightening. It's frightening. And then you wanted to talk about something. I went through a bunch of things, but is there anything else you...
Well, you were talking to the guy that just wrote the book about hanging chads. I mean, with as much money that we have soaked in over there, I remember it particularly when there was $9 billion lost, when Bremer was in charge.
Yeah. Yep.
And I remember hearing congressmen actually getting on TV and talking about, well, that wasn't American taxpayer dollars. That wasn't our money to lose. And I just remember going, excuse me, aren't we going to have to pay that back in some way, shape, or form? And they just, like, totally skated right over the I was just floored when I heard one of the Republican congressmen say that. I thought, you know, can it get any worse? And
Well,
of course,
don't forget, Paul Brenner is the guy that did this marvelous job in the Middle East.
Well,
and for that, he got
the army.
Yeah, and giving the Baathists a shower.
Yeah.
You know, he debathified the country, and they gave him the Presidential Medal of Freedom, our nation's the highest civilian.
Crazy.
But you know, you have to look at it from the perspective of the administration. They were working economies of scale. They just didn't give it to Paul Bremer. They gave it to Tommy Franks, who totally screwed up the attack.
Yeah.
And then they gave it to George Tenet, who, of course, his lasting legacy is the fact that the CIA was accused of not providing the intelligence. So if the CIA gave them bad intelligence and told them that there weren't WMDs, or told them that there were WMDs when they weren't, why would you reward a guy with the Presidential Medal of Freedom? I mean, it's just...
Well, I think the worst job you do in this administration, the more praise and the more awards you get.
Well, you know what?
That seems to have been a pattern this whole time.
You're absolutely right, Kristen. Thanks a million for the call. I really appreciate it. Because yesterday I asked the question, has there ever, and I mean ever been a group of people so incompetent and so unqualified and so in over their heads than this Bush crowd? I mean, you got downtown Mikey Brown, that FEMA fool, you know, the heck of a job brownie. You got Michael the Skull shirt off. We talked about him taking off for Atlanta the day after Katrina to hit to attend a symposium on bird flu, for God's sake. Bernie Kerik, he was going to be the guy that was going to be handpicked by Bush to run Department of Homeland Security, that corrupt cop. You know, the guy that took an apartment above 9/11 when all of the first responders were supposed to get a break. It was donated to the police department, so the first responders could get a break and go in and grab an hour or two sleep before going back in. And he used it as a love nest. This guy was married at the time, and by the way, he had a judgment against him for not paying his condo dues. This is the guy that was was handpicked by Bush, for God's sake. And then, you know, Tommy Thompson. Remember him? You probably don't remember. He was the very first HHS secretary, you know, Health and Human Services secretary. I mean, this buffoon. I mean, this guy, when the first anthrax came out in the envelope that went into Daschle's office, he said, I want everyone to know, don't worry, anthrax isn't contagious. Well, you know, they sent him back to Fond du Lac to straighten cheese. And how about David Safavian, another pal of Abramoff's? I mean, this guy was the chief purchasing officer for the entire United States government. How about former head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Richard Myers? He had his daughter appointed to some lofty position with responsibilities, and she'd never done anything other than run a small store, basically. Yeah, she'd had a gun in her desk, though. And then we talked about Bremer. I mean, there's the guy. He fires the Iraqi army, gets rid of the Baathists, and for this he gets the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Same thing for Tom Ridge, right? Sole contribution to the Department of Homeland Security was the threat level rainbow. He gets taken out. Hey, but for my money, and Kristen said it, for my money, nobody has failed more and been more rewarded and promoted for failure more than Condi Rice. Now, that's Condi Rice, the Secretary of State, not Condi Rice, the oil tanker. Now, you know it. I know it. The Democrats know it. Americans know it. The world knows it. And now the conservatives know it. We knew she received the August 6th presidential daily brief, right? That's the one that said, quote unquote, Bin Laden determined to attack in the United States. In 11 days, it's going to be 5 years since she got her hands on that. And in 46 days, it will be the fifth anniversary of 9/11. Richard Clark, the anti-terrorism czar, the chief anti-terrorism czar in the entire Bush government. The guy was running around with hair on fire. I mean, he was the one that nobody would pay attention to. And then you have former Senator Gary Hart. Gary Hart told me this. He had given a speech. If you recall, he was the Democratic senator from Colorado, and he was with Senator Warren Rudman of New Hampshire. And the two of them did a report called the Hart-Rudman Report. It was investigating terrorism and the potential terrorism and the potential for terrorism in the United States. And it was called the Hart-Rudman Report. You can look it up right now online. It's 150 pages. It's not really that deep. It's pretty simple. And this came out in February of 2001. And in February 2001, it said in the executive summary, all you need to do is read the executive summary. It's 4, 5, 6 pages. It will say the following. Bin Laden, Al-Qaeda, planes as bombs. What part of bin Laden, al-Qaeda, and planes as bombs does the National Security Advisor of the United States, Condoleezza Rice, not get? Because you do remember, after this, she said, oh, now who could have ever thought that they would use planes as bombs? And who would have ever thought that? Well, you, Condi, if you'd read the damn thing. And it came out in February, and the planes went into the buildings in September. If you'd read it, you would have known that. I'm not making this up, ladies and gentlemen. Google it. Hart-Rudman Report. There it is. Read the executive summary. You will see. I'm not making this stuff up. And so what does she do? Oh, by the way, Gary Hart told me he was then giving a symposium to IATA, the International Air Transport Association, headquartered in Montreal. And he had said to them, you guys need to do something. You need to securitize your planes. You're going to get hit. We've studied this thing. We've been to 26 countries around the world. They, Al-Qaeda, are planning something. You've got to do something, and you've got to, you know, make your airplanes more secure. You've got to secure the pilot's door. You've got to have more security. You've got to have blah, blah, blah. And the next day, the papers in Montreal said, you know, Senator Hart predicts dire consequences for the airline industry as from a terrorist point of view. And he got on a plane, he flew to Washington, and he saw Condi Rice. Now, Condi Rice actually worked on Gary Hart's senatorial campaign in Colorado when she was a student. You didn't know that, did you? This is why you hang out with me. You learn these little bon mots. Okay, so here's the thing. He goes, he wants to see Cheney and he wants to see Bush. They were too busy. And so he says to her, Condi, you need to understand, there's a serious problem with planes. There's a serious problem with the security of planes. Bin Laden's out there. Al-Qaeda's out there. They're going to do something, and you need to do something now. That was on September the 5th, 2001. She did nothing. Well, I think she probably ordered Diet Coke. This is a person who failed her president, failed her country, and she failed you and me, and she gets a promotion. And now look at the world. I mean, look at the state of the world that the Secretary of State is operating in. Russia and their old WMDs, North Korea, Iran, Syria, Lebanon, Hezbollah, Hamas, Palestine, Israel. How are they on the world stage? How's Iraq doing? Peaceful and quiet? How about her lunch prior to the G8? Just 3 weeks ago with Russia's foreign minister, her counterpart in the Russian government. She says, well, there's only one democracy in the Middle East, and that's Lebanon, and it's fragile other than Iraq. Oh, I have two for you. Number one is Israel, and number two is Palestine. Help me, Lord. We have fools in charge. Adolescents going through puberty representing us on the world stage. Where is Karen Hughes when you need her? Mean woman. Whoa. When she's not chief of protocol on behalf of the United States government, she's back home on the spread in Texas, kickstarting a Hummer. John Elliott, Majority Report, Air America, 866-303-2270. Way more to go. Don't go away.
The Majority Report, introducing conservatives to truth.
Prepare to be astonished.
Only on Air America Radio.
A liberal dose of the truth.
to me.
At Cache Creek Casino Resort, win fast, win often with Cash Fever Jackpots. Jackpots start at $20,000 and are guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Every time a Cash Fever jackpot hits, a Cash Club player wins just for playing with their card. Plus, you can check the Cash Fever jackpot total and your Cash Club points online now at CashCreek.com. So join Cash Club today and get the fever. Cache Creek Casino Resort.
Is taking some time off, sitting in for Sam Cedar, John Elliott, the most dangerous liberal in America.
We're back, Majority Report. Thanks to Sam for giving me the chair while he's taking a week, a well-deserved week off. We're talking about Condi Rice. And we're not alone, you and I. Now we have Insight Magazine, which, for those of you that don't know, is a conservative magazine. They're heading a dump Condi campaign. Foreign policy conservatives are charging that the State Department has hijacked the Bush agenda. Conservative national security allies of President Bush are in revolt against Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, saying that she is incompetent and has reversed the administration's national security and foreign policy agenda as if there was one. The conservatives, who included Newt Gingrich, Richard Perle, and leading current and former members of the Pentagon and National Security Council, have urged the president to transfer Ms. Rice out of the State Department and put her into an advisory role. They say she has a lack of understanding of the Middle East. Not as if he does, huh? And that he's yet to understand that people make policy and not the other way around. They said that Iran has been exploiting Ms. Rice's inexperience and incompetence to accelerate its nuclear weapons program. And they expect a collapse of her policy in the next few months. They're sending signals today for Bush to get rid of her and move her out. So now we have Condoleezza Rice, the National Security Advisor. Condoleezza Rice, the oil tanker. Condoleezza Rice, the Secretary of State. And now, for your edification here on the Air America Radio Network, ladies and gentlemen, you have Condoleezza Rice, the song. Take it away, boys.
Condoleezza Rice wears lots of makeup. Is that to cover up her sense of shame? Because Condoleezza Rice, she didn't wake up to warnings about hijackers and planes. There sure was a lot of talk. She could have done some more about it. Wouldn't it be nice if we could wake up with a sense of true security, knowing that our leaders were all really an intelligent community? So if there's ever a threat to our nation, they don't forget and just go on vacation.
Hey, it's August. It's nice this time of year.
Maybe if we think and wish and pray that bad things won't come true.
Yeah, right.
They'll just go away. And maybe then we can spend more time and plan the things we do. Like play the piano and invade countries. Wouldn't that be nice? Seems the more we talk about it, there's still so much more you gotta do about it. So start working.
Johnny Walker. Monique, Brooklyn, New York. How are you? You're on the Majority Report with John Elliott. How are you doing?
I'm depressed. Trying to
You're
be
what?
Optimistic. I'm depressed. Trying to be optimistic.
Well, let me try and make you feel worse. Go ahead.
Well, my question is to you is, what can we do before the elections to make our voice be heard? I mean, what can we do to be proactive? I mean, to me, the writing is on the wall. Okay. I see the setup for the war with Iran, and I mean, what can we do to stop this government? I mean, as a people, what can we do besides voting? Which I think that they're setting it up that they're going to have to postpone the vote because we're going to be.
They're not going to postpone the vote. They're not going to postpone the vote. They're not going to postpone the vote. But we need to get active. Now, you talk about the war in Iran. We have Scott Ritter coming on tomorrow. Scott Ritter, of course, said that there would be a war in Iraq, and there were no WMDs there because he was a UN weapons inspector.
Right.
He's also a Republican, also voted for Bush in 2000, and he now has a book coming out very soon. We have the first interview with him, actually. It's a book called Target Iran. It isn't even out yet. I have photocopy pages of it, so it's not even really in its final form. And it's a fascinating book, and like everything, Scott makes a case for it. It comes across well. So he'll be with us tomorrow. And yes, Syria is on the list. It has been on the list. Iran is on the list. They don't know what to do with North Korea. And it's screaming tear your hair out. But the reality is to get involved. To get involved means to write your newspaper, to call the editor of your television station, ask to speak to the news director, to call your radio station, ask to speak to the news director. Tell them they need to cover this story. They need to get the truth out and they need to keep on it. And do it in a way that you don't come across as a raging lunatic. Do it in a way as being very straightforward and intelligent, saying this is going on in our world and you guys aren't covering it. And then you put the same pressure on your congressman and the same pressure on your senator. You say, this is how I feel. This is what I think. And then you start talking about it in your churches, and you start talking about it in your school meetings, and you start talking about it in shopping malls, and you start talking about it at soccer games and where people gather. And you get people to the point where they have to do something. And doing something is they call their Democratic people and say, you need people to run to the polls. You need me to make phone calls. You need me to do something. I'm there to do it because we need to do something to change this election. Monique, thanks a million. Appreciate the call from Brooklyn, New York. The Majority Report, John Elliott. Lots more to go. We'll be right back.
The Majority Report on Air America Radio. You're listening to AM 1320.
It's the best bike vacation ever.
3 days of cycling in the Sierra foothills, camping under the stars, catered gourmet meals, entertainment, and in-camp activities.
It's the 20th annual Emigrant Trails Bike Trek, Friday, September 8th through Sunday, September 10th. This excellent adventure attracts over 400 bicycle riders and helps support Breathe California Sacramento's efforts to improve air quality in our area and to work to eliminate lung disease. Make your plans now and start raising much-needed funds by registering today at sacbreathe.org or by calling 916-444-5900. You can ride as an individual or put together a team of co-workers or friends. Travel at your own pace through stunning scenery, then relax in a camp with massage, yoga, or a beverage from the cantina. Free training rides prepare you for the best bike vacation ever. The 20th Annual Emigrant Trails Bike Trek, September 8th through September 10th. 3 days of cycling, camping, and fun. Go to sacbreathe.org or call 916-444-5900 and sign up today.
It's kind of common sense. It's another Midwest value. Don't goad the enemy to attack you. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's all that swagger thing. Like at the, remember at the Republican convention, he said, some people see me and they see a swagger, certain swagger. Well, in Texas, we call that walking. Mm-hmm. In Minnesota, we call that being a jerk. Walk with some
dignity.
Humility.
Yes, humility.
Humility.
Right.
You know, Bush says he's a big, like, Jesus guy. You know, Jesus didn't walk with a swagger. Jesus didn't go like, you know, see that water I turn into wine?
Me.
That was me.
It's not a show-off.
See that blind guy over there that he's not bumping into things anymore? Jesus.
This is a blowhard.
Yeah. That big boulder, I rolled out of the entrance of the cave where I was dead. Now I'm alive. Yeah. Bring it on. You know, Jesus. That wasn't Jesus. Walk with some humility.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, you can be strong. You can be courageous. Yeah. It's not, that kind of bluster isn't strong. Yeah.
That's now, from where you sit, what are your other observations regarding now we're nearly halfway through the second term of the Bush administration.
Yes.
What are your observations generally about things now?
He's in the toilet. Mm-hmm. Actually, Lorne Michaels said something very funny to me. He said that that Bush.
We all do.
Great prophet, Jesus.
Yes.
As my rabbi told me, he had a lot of great ideas, none of them new. That's what my rabbi used to tell me. Anyway, Bush, Lorne Michaels said to me that Bush looks like a guy whose show's just been canceled, but he has 9 more to do. And he kind of...
Yeah. I know that feeling.
You know that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I mean, obviously the war is just going terribly. You know, if he was going to admit those mistakes, he should have admitted a couple of things. For example, misled us into the war, didn't send enough troops, disbanded the Iraqi army by telling them, you know, by telling 300,000 guys, you're fired, we're not going to pay you, get the hell out of here, and take your weapons with you.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
Now, back to the most dangerous liberal in America, John Elliott.
Welcome back. Welcome back to the Majority Report with John Elliott. How are you? Thank you for joining us this evening. Dr. Emory Kimball is a professor of public health at the University of Washington, and she's going to scare the hell out of you very soon, and not deliberately. She's just going to tell you what's going on. Because we sit there and we talk about terror in the world on terror and to war on terror and terrorism and all that, but there's a more insidious situation that is brewing, and that is disease. And she has a book out called Risky Trade, Infectious Disease in the Era of Global Trade. And with the globalization of trade comes the fact that there are diseases that can be transported around the world very, very quickly. She joins us from her home in Washington, Dr. Emory Kimball. How are you? Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Thank you. I'm delighted that you are here. This is a fascinating book. I mean, we all know about SARS and what SARS started, but you talk about the Global Express. And the Global Express, why don't you describe what you mean by the Global Express? And the paragraph starts off with, "The emergence of new human infections and the globalization of commerce are not threats. They're realities that will mold the way the people of the world live their lives and conduct business in decades to come."
Well, that's exactly right. When I talk of the Global Express, I'm talking about both trade and travel. And it's really remarkable that we have over $6 trillion worth of goods crossing international borders on an annual basis. And we have more than 500 million people crossing international borders on an annual basis. So we're the most mobile society in the history of the human family.
And right now, the idea of checking seems to be customs checking for packages, and it also for human beings, it seems to be a transportation aviation type checking to see whether or not a person is a potential terrorist. We're not really concerned about any of the diseases that people have or diseases that could be inadvertently or deliberately contained in any of the merchandise and products that are sent, right?
That's true. What we're looking at is a situation where really our safety, that is to say the American consumer, is dependent on the strength of systems thousands of miles away to detect disease both in product and in people.
Well, most of the products that we import come from third world countries because we are the world's only superpower. And you know where I'm going with this, Dr. Kimball. Because we're such a consuming nation, we consume more products per capita than any other country in the world. And because most of our stuff is now coming from overseas, thanks to the outsourcing of manufacturing in America, and generally coming from third world countries, the idea of a SARS type or an avian flu type disease being contained in a container of a computer game or with some bananas or with some furniture is not, it's not too far-fetched, is it?
Not at all far-fetched. In fact, what the book goes over is some of the incidences that we've already had of a product that's been contaminated traveling, such as food. And I guess the bottom line is that as a consuming nation, we need to be vitally concerned with the strength of public safety systems in other countries and the protection of those populations.
We don't even have them in place here. How can we expect other countries that are developing nations to put in screening systems to ensure our health? I mean, are we putting, is the government putting any pressure on other nations, the Thailands of the world and the Chinas of the world, to say, you know, yeah, I know you're making radios cheaper than we can make them here, but we have to make sure that they're disease-free when they're put into that box. How do we do that?
Well, I think radios are probably a little less of a threat, but it's actually not got to come from government. It's really got to come from the corporations themselves. The transnational business interests really have to see this as central and a value in the way that they do their business on a daily basis.
But you point out the World Trade Organization doesn't even have an ongoing health committee.
That's true. And I think that's a big gap. And as you've seen in the World Trade Organization, they've bumped into things like the lack of ability to treat HIV in poor countries because of intellectual property protections, the problems with poor countries getting access to agricultural commerce, which is vital dollars for them because of guidelines they can't meet. I think there is very much a central need for the World Trade Organization to include a deliberate consideration of health concerns.
You talk about three things that we can do. Level one is steps towards prevention. And again, you're talking about health and trade officials and individuals from the public and private sector being more effective in taking on the challenges. But then you go on and there's a couple of other things that you do point out, and that is the level two is the disease diffusion at the local level, which in effect you're talking about once a disease has been determined, the next level of presentation, as you point out, is avoiding a local epidemic. And are organizations or cities or communities around the world prepared to deal with it? I mean, we saw how Toronto managed to deal with SARS, and they seem to be dealing with that from a consumer point of view and from a person in the media. I think they were dealing with that as effectively as they possibly could.
Yes, and Toronto is a very well-funded and financed public health establishment. What you really need to do is begin to invest, that is, wealthy countries and wealthy corporations, in those epidemiologic systems, that's a long word, but public health systems, to allow disease containment at the source. The estimates, for example, for avian influenza that the U.S. government's looking at are that within 6 weeks at the outside, you would need to get Tamiflu to the site of major spread. And if you're talking about rural Thailand or rural Vietnam, that's a big challenge with the systems that exist there now. So it's really... It's really important for wealthy governments and wealthy corporations to understand that their well-being really depends on the very poorest sites at which these activities could take place.
Boy, you're asking a lot from our government to try and wake up and smell the coffee on that one. You're saying, in effect, that what we have a responsibility as, let's say, Theraflu is really a product of the Western world. You're saying that, in effect, we should say to nations like Thailand and nations like Indonesia and nations throughout the world that are third world nations, to say to them, look, we need to make sure you've got an adequate supply of this. And are you saying that the World Health Organization needs to jump in and do an arm's length agreement with the World Trade Organization and ensure that perhaps some of the compensation that these countries get for their goods is paid in preventative medicine? Is that a thought?
That's a very good thought, and I think thinking out of the box like that is exactly what we're looking for. And in fact, this is beginning to happen. If you look at the World Health Organization, for example, there is a body of international regulations called the International Health Regulations, which were passed last summer. And for the first time, they include an obligation of all countries in the world to be able to contain disease within their borders. They also contain an obligation for wealthy countries to underwrite that ability in poor countries. And that's what you're going to see more of. The U.S. government has recently put out a request for proposals allowing foreign governments to request from the U.S. government on a cooperative basis funds to reinforce their own pandemic preparedness against avian influenza. And I think you're going to see a lot more of that.
Okay, let's get to the scary part. Definition of pandemic, definition of bird flu. Is it coming? Is it just a matter of time? Can it be prevented? Can you walk me down that road, please?
Sure, I can. Bird flu has now been found in avians, that is, in birds, in 18 countries. And we've seen...
18 countries?
18 countries around the world, exactly. Since the
how many of those countries 5 years ago?
Oh, 5 years ago we had no bird flu. It started in 2003, so that would be 3 years ago.
Okay.
And you've seen sort of a continued count of human infections, and that's been really of concern. And you've seen more human infections this year than you did last year and than you did the year before. This is really concerning because H5N1, which is the name of the flu virus we're looking at, really has the potential with just a few changes to become a major human pandemic. And I don't think that's really just scare talk. I think that's real. And
Well, you're not a person that's prone to scaring. I mean, you're a professor of public health at an exceptional university, and you're not yelling hair on fire at me that, God, we got to do something today. You're being very pragmatic and telling us exactly what's going on, and that's even more chilling. So,
Well, I think the point is that being scared really doesn't get us anywhere. Being prepared will get us a lot of distance, and so what we need to do is just be realistic about the threat and understand that just as globalization has brought you, you know, fruits during the winter months, which, of course, in the 50s or 60s you simply didn't have on your table, it's also brought a very real vulnerability all around the world, as we saw with SARS. So influenza is a very contagious disease and potentially, you know, very lethal for us.
So influenza as itself. I mean, but what about, you know, bringing back those great hits of the 50s and 60s like polio and tuberculosis and beriberi and bubonic plague and yellow fever and...
Well, the great hits of the 50s, some of them have been fairly well vanquished. You know, we're struggling with the last few cases of polio in the world. So that one I would hopefully take off the radar. But tuberculosis is very much alive and well, unfortunately, and still very much of a control problem. And again, that's a question of resources. You know, we in the United States really need to realize that if we can't control tuberculosis and drug-resistant tuberculosis in Vietnam and in the Philippines and in other places where it's very high risk, you know, it will come and visit us. That's just the nature of the world we live in.
If we live in a world, which we do, in the United States, where we have been told that if a Category 4 or 5 storm hits New Orleans, their levees are not going to hold, and we've been told that evidently for a long time, And I talked to congressmen on both sides of the political spectrum in Louisiana after this, and they said it was a bipartisan effort. They would be saber-rattling up in D.C. saying, look, we need money to shore up the levees, we need this, we need that, on both sides, and as a united front representing the state of Louisiana. And they told me no one cared. It was a non-issue to them. It was like, don't worry about it. You get storms, you'll deal with it. And now we see what happens, and now we see that we were, as a nation, not ready. And I'm not going to criticize even the administration or at the state level or the civic level or the national level. I'm just saying as a nation, we knew this could have happened, and we didn't do anything about it. Now you're telling us that this pandemic will happen at some point in time. And we're talking the usual suspects that are out there not paying attention to a level 4 or 5 hurricane, and now we're expected to convince them that avian flu is going to be coming along and is going to be an atrocious pandemic. How can we get their attention and shake them and say, damn it, wake up, you have to do something? How do we do that?
That's, I think, a very, very important question. And unfortunately, I'm not all that optimistic. If you look at HIV... And I
Goody. Now I feel so much better.
I looked a lot at HIV/AIDS and was very much part of planning national HIV/AIDS program in Latin America and the Caribbean for WHO. And our experience is that until you start seeing cases and people really understand that you're not just Chicken Little running around saying the sky is going to fall, it's really very hard to motivate people. And that's part of why I wrote the book, is sort of we have been given as the human family an intellect, and hopefully we'll use it and take a look at realistic risks that are really well documented, really well understood by science, and take some action. I'm not that optimistic that'll happen, and it just may take a pandemic to make sure we don't have a second one. You see what I'm saying?
I do. And having been in the business world most of my life, I realize that what tends to make the world go round is money. And when money's on the table, it really gets people's attention. And so if I apply that theory that I learned probably at Runnymede Road grade school when I was very young, that money starts at all, we have to go to the business leaders and say, okay, you know, you weren't that worried about Katrina and all that, but you're not that worried about bird flu. But let me point it out to you in Ronald McDonald language. Your stock is going to take a hit of 75% if everybody in your company comes down with this flu and can't work.
Exactly.
And all of a sudden, maybe these corporations are all going to get together and, what are we going to do now? And then maybe we get them together and get you in front of business leaders and get business leaders working on this where, you know, the leaders of the world in business get together and say, we've got to do something, and then they pressure the government, and maybe we hold it off.
I think it does all start with that business thinking, and that's very much the direction of the book. And if you look at the experience with HIV/AIDS, going back to that, we now do have a Global Business Council on AIDS that meets along with the Davos Summit, and they have documented some modest and many would say unsatisfactory progress towards addressing that epidemic. But business can be a very potentially powerful partner. And the same people who work 9 to 5 in business live their life in the community as well. So I'm actually quite optimistic that long-range businesses such as banking, financial, insurance industry, people who aren't just on the short paper on Wall Street, are going to begin to incorporate these things into their thinking, because the experience is just too compelling. If you look at the economic losses of diseases like SARS with $85 billion, you know, the projection for poultry, avian influenza was $130 billion in Korea 2 years ago for all of Southeast Asia, and I think we're passing that. So, I mean, Mother Nature also talks money. And I think that it will be very good when CEOs and others in position of responsibility begin to listen to those costs and understand that it's not only lives and suffering, it's also very real financial damage that they're going to suffer.
Well, we've had a bit of a megaphone here tonight, you and I. We've been able to, hopefully those business people that are listening to this program around the country and around the world on the Internet will recognize that something has to be done and not just say, oh, you know, I think I'll go home and have dinner. And, you know, actually start thinking about doing something and getting involved. Dr. Anne-Marie Kimball, professor of public health at the University of Washington up in Husky Country. Thanks very much for your time tonight. I really appreciate it. You've scared us all. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed talking with you.
It's my pleasure, Dr. Kimball. Dr. Emery Kimball, professor of public health at the University of Washington, talking about the potential for a very real pandemic that is going to come unless somebody does something about it. And I just can't do it all. I can't do it all. I need your help. John Elliott, Majority Report, Air America Radio Network. We'll be back. Lots more. We'll take your calls.
The Majority Report with Janine Garofalo and Sam Cedar.
What is the matter with you people?
Quiet, numbskulls. I'm broadcasting.
On Air America Radio.
A liberal dose of the truth.
I always consider myself the father of four boys, even though two of my sons are gone. Our twins, Kevin and Brian, died when their boat capsized. Bad weather, cold water, and the absence of life jackets contributed to their deaths. If I can help one person avoid the daily heartbreak that my wife and family must endure, then asking you to be responsible on your boat will be well worth my time. Visit BoatSmarter.com, and remember, if it's your boat, it's your responsibility.
It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. Tubes. Why? Enormous tubes. Massive, massive tubes. It really is the internet consumer bill of rights. Because you got tangled up with all of these things and going on the internet commercially. The world has turned against this. If your own personal internet, that is you and me. You and me. Tubes. The internet is not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
It's a series of tubes.
So hot today in New York City, that naked guy on the subway was screaming, "Who's crazy now?" Hot down in Washington, D.C., Dick Cheney replaced his pacemaker with an ice maker. Is that hot? It's so hot, Christie Brinkley is now dating Ben and Jerry.
Whoa!
It's so hot today, ladies and gentlemen, George W. Bush told Al Roker to stop doing that. That's what he said. That's what President Bush said at the G8 summit. He was overheard using a dirty language at the G8 summit. And not only that, later he was ejected for headbutting.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
Get a tattoo so people know that I'm cool. Everybody is different and I want to be too.
Want to see my tattoo?
I've got an earring, but I can't help but think that I'll ever.
John Elliott, Majority Report on the Air America Radio Network, sitting in for Sam Cedar. Hey, don't forget John's excellent summer adventure continues tomorrow night. Mark it down. Jonathan Alter will be here. The best columnist, not the best columnist for Newsweek, he's, you know, because there's just so many of them. He's my favorite columnist. Paul Krugman, the legendary Paul Krugman, op-ed columnist for the New York Times, author, Princeton professor, a world-class economist, will be joining us. Scott Ritter, former UN weapons inspector, The guy that said, there aren't any weapons over there. Is no one listening? And no one in the administration listened. And Michael Shearer, CBS News terrorism expert, former of CIA, and the man who started the and opened up the Bin Laden unit at the CIA that was just disbanded, making us oh so much safer, and he'll weigh in on that. So John's excellent summer adventure here on the Majority Report continues tomorrow, so make sure you tell your friends Jonathan Alter, Paul Krugman, Scott Ritter, Michael Shearer, what a jam-packed fun time we are going to have. Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. Oh, by the way, the decider has made a decision. President Bush has decided to bring more troops into Baghdad. Why? If things are going so well, as the Republicans keep, why change? Why do they keep changing stuff? Did you know what this was called, by the way? Operation Together Forward. God, I almost thought it's so pathetic the Democrats could have come up with something like that. Operation Together Forward. It's a joint Iraqi coalition military operation. Now, the coalition is the coalition, meaning that's the National Guard, the Marines, and the Army. That's the coalition. And we're trying to train the Iraqis, and we're, you know, together we'll do better, that type of thing. UN estimates that more than 14,000 Iraqis have been killed just this year. And we've been at this for 3 years. Over 3 years. But not to be outdone. Do we have a little puppet music that we could play for this? Because we're going to talk about Nouri al-Maliki. Do we have it a little, Justin? Can we play a little? Yeah. This is the Iraqi Prime Minister number 3. We're on our third Prime Minister here. And he's spoke to Congress today. He said that his nation wants to play a role in Mideast stability and to encourage dialogue to solve international conflicts. Yo, Nouri, how about the green zone? You can't even keep the green zone free. I mean, you got a city there, Baghdad, is going bump in the night, Nouri. And now you're going to play a leading role in Mideast stability? Hey, memo to Nouri. Take the noon balloon to Saskatoon, pal. It's the Majority Report. John Elliott, I'll be doing the same thing tomorrow here on the Air America Radio Network. I love it that you stayed tuned and listened to this show. We'll do it all again tomorrow. Great guests, but it won't be anything without you.